From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mandaloon fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie's on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Beveridge does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Medina Spirit fights on the outside. Midnight Bourbon. Ron Bauer is rolling up to them. Coming by the eighth pole, it is now Ron Bauer storming to the front, taking over from Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit has dropped back. Keep Me In Mind is fourth. Ron Bauer and Flavian Pratt win the Preakness, pulling away by four on the wire.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And it's Essential Quality.
Here's Mike Penna.
Well, the 2021 Triple Crown is now in the rearview mirror, and the attention of the racing world will become increasingly more focused on the road to the Breeders' Cup. But man, what a way to wrap things up last Saturday at Belmont Park, huh? What a horse race. Yeah, good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you aboard for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Well, what we witnessed last Saturday in the 153rd Belmont Stakes is in so many ways the reason we all fell in love with the sport of thoroughbred racing. Two majestic equine athletes giving their all in an epic stretch battle, which brought back memories of Affirmed and Alidar 43 years earlier. Both horses bringing ultra-positive stories along with them. Think about it. Essential Quality, the juvenile champion, getting redemption after being beaten as the favorite in the Kentucky Derby 5 weeks earlier. Godolphin, Brad Cox, Luis Saez, and his agent Kieran McLaughlin. I dare you to find anyone with a bad word to say about any of those individuals. Hot Rod Charlie, a horse who attracted very, very little interest at the sales when he was a yearling and has now proven all of his doubters wrong. Yeah, he is all racehorse. Bloodstock agents Bob Feld and Sean Feld believed in him when nobody else did. The O'Neill family came on board. Brothers Doug and Dennis, their nephew Patrick, who called his football teammates from Brown University and said, "Hey guys, let's go to Del Mar. I want to introduce you to horse racing." I bet those guys are glad that they accepted that invitation. The backstory, which Patrick told you on this show last Saturday, of Hot Rod Charlie running to benefit the Jake Panis Walk-On Football Endowment at the University of South Carolina. Another very positive storyline surrounding the two horses that nearly hit the line together in the Belmont Stakes last Saturday. Jake, the son of Stephen Panis, who heads up America's Best Racing, was killed in a car accident at the age of 16 before he had the chance to walk on as a football player at South Carolina. And Doug O'Neill became friends with Stephen Panis over the years and thought, boy, what a great way to do something and give back with a horse that's turned out to make everybody a believer. So many positive storylines coming out of the final leg of this year's Triple Crown. And I said similar things, if you remember, on this same show. I said similar things about the connections of Preakness winner Ron Bauer after that race. Trainer Michael McCarthy, the owner-breeder tandem of John and Diane Fratkin, who had plans to sell Rombauer last year, but the sale was canceled due to COVID, so they kept him. Now he's a Classic winner. And jockey Flavien Prat. Again, you won't find too many people with a bad thing to say about those connections either. The Preakness and the Belmont Stakes are the reasons so many of us fell in love with this great sport of thoroughbred racing in the first place. But I'm not sure that those will be the things most people are going to remember when they think back on the 2021 Triple Crown, especially if Medina Spirit ends up being disqualified from the Kentucky Derby. That is going to be the story of the year in thoroughbred racing. I mean, a horse getting disqualified from the world's most famous horse race is kind of a big deal. But I think that's a shame that that will be the overshadowing factor that most people, certainly people outside of thoroughbred racing, are going to remember about the 2021 Triple Crown when there were so many other positive storylines associated with it. So that's my poll question this morning. What will you remember most about this year's Triple Crown? Give you some choices here, too. Medina Spirit's win in the Kentucky Derby. And let's face it, Medina Spirit himself, before all of these things came out, Medina Spirit was a horse that sold for, what, $1,000 as a yearling? He was by a little-known sire in Britannico, who only had a few foals out there. And here's Medina Spirit. That was a positive storyline until the medication news broke. So here's your choices. Medina Spirit's win in the Kentucky Derby, Rombauer winning the Preakness, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont, or drug allegations against Bob Baffert. What will you remember most about this year's Triple Crown? I'm really curious to see how this one goes. Go to @HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, you can email your answer to me. Mike@horseracingradio.net is the way to get in touch with the show. What will you remember most about this year's Triple Crown? Medina Spirit's win in the Kentucky Derby, Rombauer winning the Preakness, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont, or drug allegations against Bob Baffert? Those are the four choices. Let me know your thoughts. All right, here's the lineup for this morning's program, and it's going to be busy. 8:15, about 8 or 9 minutes from right now, I'm going to welcome in Grant Forster. The trainer will talk about Pirate's Punch, the defending champion in today's Grade 3 Salvatore Mile at Monmouth Park. At 8:35, it's an interview with our industry star of the week for this Saturday morning. 9 o'clock, Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment, will be here to talk about finally being allowed to open the doors again later this afternoon after enduring months of shutdown in Canada. Really looking forward to that interview, and congratulations to the folks at Woodbine finally being able to open. That's wonderful news. 9:20, this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. I'll visit with longtime Brad Cox assistant trainer, Tessa Boucher. Should be a fantastic segment, as those typically are. 9:40, we'll look ahead to the Royal Ascot meeting, which begins on Tuesday. I'll do that with Breeders' Cup's Jim Gluckson. 10 o'clock, hour three of the show kicks off with In the Room with Sean Clancy, his one-on-one conversation this week with steeplechase jockey Tom Garner. And at 10:20, Kurt Becker will take you on a stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And we wrap up the show in a big way. 10:40 Eastern, I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with the man who has ridden more Breeders' Cup winners than any jockey in history. Hall of Famer Mike Smith is going to be here at 10:40. So stay tuned for that one. It is a very busy program. It kicks off next with Grant Forster. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner-up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Pirate's Punch has the lead. Pirate's Punch is going to have to hold off top line growth. Bal Harbor gets some room in the red cap, scoots through to the inside. Pirate's Punch at the top of the stretch. Pirate's Punch is two lengths clear, top line growth. Also, Bal Harbor in pursuit. Name Changer is wide in that second grouping. Pirate's Punch just keeps finding on the front end. It's three lengths clear. Top line growth is going to try one more time with Bal Harbor. Pirate's Punch in the Salvatore Mile gets the win. Tight there for second. Top line growth outside of Bal Harbor. Name Changer finished fourth in 1 minute, 37 flat. Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Pirate's Punch with a huge win last year in the Salvatore Mile, the Grade 3 race, which is run at Monmouth. That was on September 20th of last year, and it will be run later today. And Pirate's Punch is back looking to defend his title for trainer Grant Forster. He'll have the services of jockey Robbie Alvarado when he goes to the post. And Grant is with me now on this Saturday morning. Grant, good morning.
Good morning. How are we doing today?
Doing great, my friend. How's Pirate's Punch doing?
He's doing fantastic. Yeah, we're really excited about getting him started. He's had a really good spring getting ready, and we have kind of targeted this race for probably the last 6 weeks, 2 months, really. It looked like that was about the time he'd be ready to run, and obviously we've had success there at Monmouth with him, and so things have gone amazingly smooth for a horse racing project.
Yeah, we haven't seen him in action since last November at Keeneland when he ran in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Let's start by looking back on last year's campaign. Share your thoughts on what you were seeing from Pirate's Punch that led you to take a shot in that Dirt Mile.
Yeah, sure. I mean, obviously with COVID, we were kind of going race to race, and things were up in the air at all times. And we took a shot in the Stephen Foster with him, and he just unfortunately doesn't care for the Churchill surface too much. Those are his only kind of the only track that he's really struggled with. He's run very well on several different tracks, but he just didn't handle the track that day. And we regrouped and kind of pointed for the two races at Monmouth. It looked like that, you know, if that would be a good series for him. Looked like a track that would play to his talents. He's a horse that runs the turns really well. Obviously has speed. And we went over for the Islin, of course. You know, he ran brilliantly that day and faced a really tough horse in Warrior's Charge, kind of like a heavyweight fight. They went toe-to-toe the whole way. I think everyone agrees we were the better horse on the day. Unfortunately, we're taken down for some interference right at the wire, and we kind of just regrouped again and went back for the Salvatore. It looked like a good spot, and we, in our pre-race discussions with the owners, decided that if he ran a big race in the Salvatore, that we would take a swing at the Dirt Mile in the Breeders' Cup, being home here in Kentucky at Keeneland, of course. And he ran, one of his best races that day in the Salvatore Mile, and we were on to the Breeders' Cup.
You mentioned the conversation you had with the owners. How much, Grant, give and take is there between a trainer and an owner when you're trying to make decisions on which race to go in or what distance to run, whatever the situation might be?
Well, I think it varies, obviously, from owner to owner and trainer to trainer. I'm someone that has a great relationship with my owners. We discuss a lot of things a lot of times. And I think, anytime you're playing in the graded stakes level, I think there's probably a lot more discussion that goes on. Obviously, Pirate's Punch is a gelding, so we're not necessarily looking at any kind of stallion-making races or anything with him. We were trying to look at where he'd fit best to make the most money. Obviously, if you have a filly, that can play into it a lot of times. But it depends on the how comfortable the owners are or how much experience they have in the game. Sometimes you might have some new owners and they look to you for guidance, and other times you're training for people that have owned horses for a long time and had a lot of experience. And it's fun having those discussions about, this is the fun part of the game, discussing which graded stake to run in, rather than trying to figure out whether we need to run for maiden 10,000 or maiden 5,000.
Yeah, you'd much rather have this conversation than have it the other way. There's no doubt about it. You said that he doesn't care for the surface at Churchill Downs, but he certainly likes that surface at Monmouth. How come?
I don't know. He's run well everywhere. To be honest, he's run well at several different tracks, and you just, for whatever reason, the Churchill track, a couple times that I've run him over it, he does show a good second on his form at Churchill in an allowance race in the fall of his a couple years ago. But he Robbie was on him that day and said that he really struggled with the track that day. And he's just a horse that kind of needs a nice tight surface. He's kind of like a big cat. He kind of really bounds along, and I think I knew last year down the backside in the Stephen Foster that he just wasn't comfortable, because typically he has his ears pricked the whole first three quarters of the race and just looks like a deer out there bounding along. So for whatever reason, he loves Monmouth, and we're really excited to be back here.
What things have you seen from him over the past 7 months or so that makes you think, okay, he's ready to fire a good shot right off the bench?
Well, he's always been a horse that's trained wonderfully. He's a very enthusiastic participant. He loves to train. He's a horse with a ton of personality. He's just a horse that really tells you when he's feeling well. And he's a horse that, fortunately for us, consistently really always feels well. And his works this year, I think he's been a little more relaxed early on in his works. And he's really finished strongly. He just seems like a little more confident, a little more polished racehorse at this point. He's a bigger, stronger horse. He's put on a fair bit of weight. So I'm a little concerned. We're coming off a long layoff, off of just works and running against horses that have mostly run recently. So, we're carrying a little extra flesh. As a trainer, you're always concerned, do you have them 100%, fit? But We didn't necessarily crank him up for this race. This is hopefully the start of a good, long campaign for him. And we've tried to just get a really, really good foundation in him. But he's certainly acting, his last four and five works in particular, he's been finishing up in 35 and change and galloping out really strongly and just doing it all on his own with my exercise rider, Gustavo, who's been on him the whole time and always works him. Yeah, I'm really excited about getting him started. I think he's fit enough that he can win, but you're always off a long layoff. As long as he runs a good race, if he gets a little tired late or something and gets beat, that's okay. As long as he runs a big race and comes out of it well, and we can go on to whatever's next for him.
Talking with trainer Grant Forster here on Trainer Talk on the Equine Forum. It is like a Trainer Talk segment, though, here on the Equine Forum this morning. A little bit early for me, too, I guess. I'm still waking up, and let's hope that Pirates Punch is a little more awake than I am when he goes to the post later today in the Salvatore Mile. He's looking to defend his title. Grant, you are closing in on 300 career victories, and you're fast approaching that milestone. You have won several greatest stakes in your career. Have you ever been in a position where you're trying to defend your title in a greatest stakes?
That's a great question. I'm trying to think. No, I don't. We won the Long Acres Mile back in 2005, and I'm trying to think if we had something in the next year in that race when I was based at Emerald Downs early on in my career. But I know we didn't. After we won the Molly Pitcher and the Chalukie with Brushed by a Star, we sold her. And didn't run back in the New Orleans Handicap the next year with Call Me George. So I don't. This is the first time we've come back to defend a title, I think. So
for people that don't know who Grant Forster is, take me through your background a little bit, Grant. How did this love of horse racing begin for you?
Yeah, sure. Kind of a quick synopsis is I grew up in just outside of Vancouver, Canada. My dad is a trainer up there. He's in the British Columbia Hall of Fame and should be in the Canadian Hall of Fame. He's the leading stakes winning trainer of all time at Hastings Park in Vancouver. And I went to the racetrack program at Arizona. Like most sons of trainers, my dad didn't want me to be a trainer. He wanted me to run a racetrack. So I went to the racetrack program at Arizona, graduated from there, and went to work at Emerald Downs in the publicity department and did that for 3 years. And just found that I really missed working with the horses and the excitement of winning and losing and that side of the business. I just preferred it more. And so went back to work for my dad, started as a groom living on the backside and worked my way back up to his assistant. And then in 2003, took out my own license and at Oaklawn Park. And I've been training since the beginning of 2003, and we've kind of been all over the place, but basically with Kentucky as our base, and we used to go to Oaklawn for the winters, and now we spend the winters at Fairgrounds in New Orleans.
You know, you take a look at your website. By the way, people can see more about you at teamforster.net, and your entire bio is on there. But one thing you talk about in your biography there is talking about the love of the challenge of getting new horses, whether it's two-year-olds or a recent claim or a private purchase, and finding out what it's going to take to make that horse successful and learning their personality. Talk about how much you enjoy that and how long it takes you to figure all that out when you get a new horse in the barn.
Well, it's very akin to coaching. And I think if I hadn't got into this, I think I would have loved coaching some sort of high school, you know, whether basketball or something like that. But you're always trying to figure out what makes your player tick and what, you know, we're trying to put these horses in a place where they can succeed, you know, mentally and physically. And I like to say we try to figure out what the horse likes to do, whether it's 5.5 on the turf or 1.25 miles on the dirt or something in between. Try to figure out what that horse likes or does best and then do it over and over and over. Pirate's Punch, for example, is obviously a very good middle distance dirt horse. So we try to, he's a two turn horse. We even though he's fast, we don't have any ambitions for sprinting him. He really excels, with the two turns, you know, and separating with his speed. They're all different, just like people. They all have their own personalities. They all, like their food a certain way, or they like, they like to train at a certain time, or some of them need a little more encouragement in the mornings, and some of them, you know, will just want to be left alone. So yeah, it's that's the fun part of it for me. Definitely is getting to know each individual horse. We're a smaller stable, so we're very hands-on, and we're able to know the personality of every horse and hopefully that helps us when we're getting ready for races to know whether the horse is coming up to a big race or whether we should be concerned that something is just not quite right with the horse, that they're not acting their normal self.
You are so much hands-on that when I called you to ask you to join me on the program, you were leaving Home Depot. You had to run out and pick up some more fans for the barn. Isn't there an assistant trainer that can do that for you? You're the head man. You have to be running around to Home Depot too?
Well, I've got the head man's credit card, so that was most important for that particular chore. But I've got a couple of great assistants. Gustavo Alvarado has been with me off and on since 2004 as our exercise rider, and Frank Best, who's been with me since 2003 off and on, is just recently rejoined the team. He's had some health struggles over the years, the last several years, but he's kind of back helping us around for a few hours in the barn in the morning. So I think any trainer will tell you the continuity in the barn is a big deal. You know, when you're, because these horses drag you away, hopefully for big races, and you have to leave the barn, and you know that the guys that are there or the women that are there know exactly how you want things done and, you know, are able to respond to whatever happens during the course of a morning training and know how you want things done. So yeah, it's a, as I'm sure everybody says to you all the time, it's a complete team effort for sure.
Grant Forster is with me here on the Equine Forum on HRN. Grant, listen, good luck with Pirates Punch later today, and really appreciate the visit this morning. Go get it done, and we'll talk again soon.
You're really great. I sure appreciate that, and look forward to speaking with you again soon.
All right, thanks, Grant. Grant Forster here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go find a nicer guy than Grant Forster in the sport of thoroughbred racing. Of course, I say that about a lot of people. There are a lot of great people in this sport, but Grant is right up there. Yeah, good luck to him and to Pirates Punch. He faces a tall order, though. My man Safi Joseph is back in the – and boy, how hot it – I mean, Safi has been on fire these past couple of years. But New York Traffic is in that race, and he's going to be a handful for Pirates Punch and for everybody to tackle in the Salvatore Mile coming up later this afternoon. All right, I'm going to get to the Lexus Legends of the Turf. When I come back, it's time for today's first bet and an interview with our industry star of the week, which is presented by Stuart Morris. But that's all after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
This is the story of a man who, by accomplishment, was the picture of a veritable giant on the palette of the world of thoroughbred racing. From modest beginnings in Pennsylvania to his death at the age of 86, he had experienced unparalleled success in both racing and breeding. The green and white silks of his stable were accountable for four Kentucky Derby winners. He was born December 12, 1859, in Johnstown, Pennsylvania, where in his early years he worked in steel mills and other industrial establishments. Recognizing very quickly that his future lay in other forms of human endeavor, so to speak, he heeded Horace Greeley's advice to head west to become a part of our nation's then burgeoning westward expansion. He became both a prospector and a gold miner, and in a relatively short period of time managed to accrue enough equity to head for the windy city on the banks of Lake Michigan, Chicago, where he began to invest in real estate. In 1898, at the age of 39, he acquired a small stable of horses as part of following a physician's advice to get out into the open air more extensively. The first horse he purchased was named Fair John, and that horse registered the first win for the soon-to-be-renowned stable at Harlem, Illinois, July 27, 1898. The best of his early stable of thoroughbreds was named Bad News, because it traveled so fast, of course, who was by Flying Dutchman out of Black Sleeves. The horse had been purchased as a three-year-old from Woodford and Buckner. In 1906, he bought a 335-acre tract of land in the bluegrass of Kentucky and expanded his interests into breeding. That farm eventually embraced some 1,500 acres and housed such prominent stallions as Helmet, Black Tony, North Star III, Black Servant, Bubbling Over, Burgo King, Balladeer, Bimlick, and Blue Larkspur. The name of the farm was Idle Hour Farm and spawned four homebred Kentucky Derby winners: Behave Yourself in 1921, Bubbling Over in 1926, Burgo King in 1932, and Broker's Tip in 1933. The latter broke his maiden in that Derby win in that infamous stretch duel with Head Play. Other notables from a virtually endless list that came from the Idle Hour Farm just outside Lexington included Baba Kenny, Big Pebble, B-Mac, and Busher. This gentleman accumulated enormous wealth from a variety of vocational interests, including Chicago real estate holdings, extensive newspaper interests, and the Beach Club Casino in Palm Beach, Florida. He was a man widely known for his charity and philanthropy, with extensive involvement in projects such as orphanages and other worthy enterprises. Among his turf-related accomplishments were the development of the Fairgrounds racetrack in New Orleans as a winter site for thoroughbred racing, and through his breeding stock was greatly responsible for the success of such subsequent luminaries of the world of racing as John W. Galbraith, Edward Morris, and movie mogul Louis B. Mayer. He died at the age of 86 on August 15, 1946, although the permanent influence of this octogenarian on the history and development of the American turf will always be indelibly emblazoned on its most glowing of pages. That man who made the green and white silks of the Idlehour Farm, the stuff of which legends are made, was a true titan of the thoroughbred world, and his story is indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing. He was Colonel E. R. Bradley.
Dan Senna and Anita's
visceral performance and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Pinoak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pinoak Stud.
Dan Senna and Anita's Winter Spring Meeting is drawing to a close, so make plans to join us over the next two weekends as Sunday, June 20th, is closing day. This Saturday, an outstanding field of California-bred sprinters will go postward in the $100,000 Thor's Echo Stakes at 6 furlongs, and on Sunday, the Grade 3 Affirm Stakes for 3-year-olds at a mile and 1/16th, and the $75,000 Possibly Perfect for fillies and mares at a mile and 1/4 on turf will highlight an 11-race card. First post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock, so be sure to join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live. Please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating as walk-up admission is not yet available. And fans, Santa Anita's grandstand paddock room has been reopened. Please visit our website for details. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The half mile, 45 and 4/5 seconds as they move for the quarter pole. It is still Victim of Love. Lake Avenue looking to come through down at the rail. There goes Lake Avenue now. Lake Avenue up to challenge Victim of Love. Pacific Gale is there. And Estilo Talentoso out in the middle of the track. And Byerness has gotten into the mix down at the rail. They're moving for the 16th pole. Lake Avenue, Estilo Talentoso. Byerness is third. They're coming on for the finish. Estilo Talentoso has won the Bed of Roses over Lake Avenue. Byerness was third. Pacific Gale finished fourth.
John Embriel with the call. Estilo Talentoso. I'll get that right. Winning the Bed of Roses on Friday at Belmont Park. It was a very first graded stakes victory for Juan Arregada, who took time to join me for a full hour this past Wednesday night on our Trainer Talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. You can go back to the website and hear the entire interview, but coming up in just a few minutes, you're going to hear an excerpt from that interview, and well-deserving. We're going to make Juan Arregada this week's Industry Star of the Week presented by Stuart Morris. That conversation I had with him was so uplifting. He's so positive, and he is such a nice person. And you love to see a smaller trainer, in terms of smaller in numbers, succeed the way that he has in his career. And he talks about it for the full hour, but you're going to hear a portion of that coming up shortly as our industry star of the week. But it is time first to help you pick a winner as we take a look at today's first bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's first bet.
And that first bet comes in Pimlico's seventh race with a post time of 3:42 Eastern later today. Number seven, Noble Commander, who is 7-2 on the morning line, has a race best 27% win projection from First Bet, rates 8 points higher than the next closest competitor in the race, leads key First Bet factors like best speed at the track and best last race class. And Noble Commander has an outside speed, and he is drawn very, very well for the six furlongs. Jockey J.D. Acosta has a $1.29 ROI for every $1 bet in Pimlico six furlong sprints this meet, according to BetMix. So number seven, Noble Commander in race seven at Pimlico is today's first bet. And I'm back with more in 60 seconds with today's Industry Star of the Week right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number one, st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, our friend Stuart Morris, who is the presenter of this segment each week here on the Equine Forum, the Industry Star of the Week, offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation. And he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, this week's Industry Star of the Week, as I mentioned, is trainer Juan Arregada, fresh off saddling his first graded stakes winner in the Bed of Roses last Friday at Belmont Park. And here's an excerpt from my trainer talk show this past Wednesday, a full hour that I spent with Juan. This is not an hour interview. It's about 15 minutes. I think you're really going to enjoy what you hear from Juan Arregada. This week's Industry Star of the Week, he began by looking back on that big win on Friday.
It was a, I can't explain you. I mean, it was a, such a great day, you know, and for me, you know, I'm a little trainer. I just have 4 years training horses, you know, and go to New York and be in Belmont for first time like a trainer and win the race, a grade three. It was something very special.
She had been really close in some big races her past few starts. She was second in the grade three Barbara Fritchie at Laurel back in February, second in the grade one Madison at Keeneland back in April, third behind Gamin in the Derby City Distaff at Churchill back on May 1st on Derby Day, and now she put it all together and finally breaks through. How proud, Juan, are you of this filly?
You know, Mike, can I tell you something? I'm a horseman. I come in, whatever I do, and like training horses, I come in from family. My grandfather used to train horses. My father training horses. My uncle training horses. We come in from family, you know? So this thing that happened to me with this filly is something very special, because this year she made me travel for so many beautiful places, you know, like when I come into Loro, I know that was the winter time. It's nothing that you really enjoy too much when it's cold, but still, you know, coming to Loro, she was supposed to run in a Saturday. They canceled the race for the bad weather. And so they called me, the racing office from Loro, they called me like 30 minutes after the race to tell me, say, Juan, please stay. We want to cover your expenses, the hotel, everything. I want that you stay with us and run in the next week. So finally we're running. She's running really good. And after that, go to Kinland, you know, and such a beautiful racetrack and see the best horses in United States, the best trainers, the best jockeys, and be in that spot. It was very, very exciting. And not only that, she's running really good, you know. So after that, I went to Kentucky Derby Day, and it was beautiful. I mean, all that, all this, the stuff I've been living with the horse, everything. I mean, I can't explain you. It was a bless. Can I tell you something like that? It's too much for me.
So you purchased her. Tell me about the first time you laid eyes on her.
The thing is, Mike, what happened, how I am a claiming trainer, sometimes I want to tell you the truth. I never thought that she can be a superstar, if I can put that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it, that she can be a good filly, but I never thought that she can be, like, race by race, be running better and better. In the beginning, what happened, Mike, when I went to the sale, I bought two horses. I bought this filly, and I bought another horse by Quality Road. So babies, when they start to, like, breathing in the beginning, it's way much better when they go in company, when they breathe together, because they learn how to running, you know, and they do stuff together. So the company from this filly, it was very slow. So every time I used to breathe with the filly in company with the colt, and the jockey used to tell me, say, Juan, she is much the best. Next time we have to do something different. So finally I decided to run it for 16,000, take a shot. And when I told him to the paddock, she was like 10 to 1 or 12 to 1. And one of my owners, it was in the races in Tampa that day, and he asked me, say, Juan, what do you think about your filly? And I say, Mike, I don't think that she will get beat today. And he said, but Juan, she is 10 to 1. I said, go and bet it, because she be tough in this race. And she should win that day, but, you know, sometimes you bad trip, you know, she broke a little slow, and she still one more jump, she should win that race. And after that, little by little, she started running races tougher and tougher, and always, if you see the form, she always says 1-3.
Yeah, it's incredible. She has never been worse than third in 14 career starts, and now she is a Grade 3 winner. To be around, and I know, Juan, you've been around a lot of good horses, but to be around a horse like this that is so consistent, and every time you put a saddle on her, you know what you're going to get. You're going to get her best effort. How special is that for a trainer?
I mean, Mike, it's something that you don't see very often, horses like that. You know, it doesn't matter what trainer, you know, are you talking. You don't see very often horses like pretty consistent like her, you know. She is a horse like from the first start. She's a money maker, you know. She always make money. So if I tell you the truth, she is very special for me. I mean, I think I will never forget this horse. Never.
I looked at the chart from the Derby City distaff, and she ran, of course, in your name there. And then you sold her in between the distaff and the Bed of Roses, of course, the new connections. It's great that you're still training the filly, though. A lot of times when you end up selling a horse, the new owners say, wait a minute, we want to send it to another trainer. It's great that they're letting you train her.
Yeah, the thing, Mike, is the deal was with the horse is after that she finished Terran Churchill, Marshall Taylor, he wants to buy the horse. So he want to give me some kind of money So finally, when they x-ray the horse, he called me back and he said, you know, Juan, my dad and my uncle, they thinking there's too much risk to buy the horse for that kind of money. What do you think if we do this? I give you a little bit less and you keep the horse training for one race. Everything was in the contract, Mike, you know.
Great.
And I was supposed to keep the horse for one race. And Marshall told me that if this filly win grade 3 or grade 2, I will take 100,000 more. And if the filly win a grade 3, I'm sorry, a grade 1, I want to take $300,000 more. So this was with the deal that I made it with them and the, with the contract, you know. So after the race, they was supposed to take the horse somewhere else. But the owners, you know, they told me that I did a good job and they want to keep the horse for me so she will stay with me for who knows how long, you know.
What a great story. That is so cool. And there are so many ways that these deals can come together in racing. And I'm so glad that this all worked out for you and that you had the success you had last Friday, because I know how much this filly has meant from you. You know, you just said how much this filly has meant to you from day one. And I think that's fantastic, Juan. Juan, this isn't the first time that you've had success with a filly and ended up selling that filly to another connection and making out pretty well. And I'm talking about Estilio Femenino, who you trained a few years back.
Yeah, Mike. I mean, I've been pretty lucky. You know, I would say pretty lucky, because a couple people sometimes they say that, no, Juan, this is lucky can be a one time, but you already been sold 3 horses, and you know, this is not luck. It's something else. And I don't know, I'm still thinking, Mike, that it's when you go to the sale, you know, and you see so many horses, so many babies, you know, and you don't have really the kind of money they spend, like hundreds of thousand dollars or whatever, you know. You only have to see whatever you can spend, you know, and you try to be very careful and not screw anything up, because, you know, you spend 20,000 on one horse and it come out no good. I mean, it's 20,000 for little people like me. It's a lot of money. So
yeah.
In 2017, Mike, I borrowed my first horse. I went to the OBS, to the same sale, to Ocala, and I paid for this filly $9,500. She was by Midnight Lou. She was the same year that was Midnight Bisou, the same year.
Yep.
And a year later, I sold the filly for $350,000 to these people from Kentucky, Pete Bradley. Estias Musin used to train in this filly. She did it okay, you know, but it was how I started to do okay with babies. And a couple months ago, before I sold this filly, I sold another filly, to Mr. Billy Matu, whose name was Before You. I sold for $100,000. I mean, she don't do too good now. She's been running a couple races, not too good. But I've been pretty successful, Mike. Thank God, you know, I'm pretty lucky, guys. And I hope keep going, you know?
Is it hard, Juan, especially with this filly, talking about Estilio Talentoso, is it sometimes hard, or was it hard at any point to make that decision? I know the money was good. I know they decided to keep the horse in training with you, but you talked about how special this filly was to you and to your career. How does a trainer put emotion aside and not get caught up in the emotion and just, like you just said, approach it as a business? How do you do it?
I mean, Mike, it's not an easy decision, like when you got to do it, because it's many things coming, you know, together. You know, I'm the kind of trainer. I'm only a trainer. You know, I'm the kind of guy that I like to, you know, if I have to groom my horses, I do it. if I have to gallop my horses, I get on my own horses. You know, I'm the exercise rider too. So I know if I have to shoe on my horses, put shoes on the horses, I know how to do it. So I do a lot of stuff with my horses. You know that for me, these animals, they are very special, you know, because I spend a lot of time with them doing stuff in the barn, working with, you know, one thing, another. So it's not something like, I'm the trainer and I can tell the guys what to do and that's it. No, I know how to do a lot of different things with horses. And this is what made me sometimes so emotional when something like that happened to me, like with the horse, the last couple of races, because I remember my when I was walking a couple of months ago, I was walking with my horse to Keeneland, to the paddock for the race. And I saw the track so beautiful, so many people, and I start to feel my tears come out from my eyes. And I said, Jesus, Juan, what's wrong with you? You don't even start on the horse, you already start to crying. I mean, I was so emotional because I'm a horseman, you know, and that stuff made me like feel like it's something really special, you know?
We touched on it earlier about your family, and I mentioned you grew up in Peru. You've been around horses your entire life. You come from a family that was involved with racing. Take me back to the beginning, Juan. Where did the love of horse racing begin for you?
I mean, Mike, this is something, you know, it's very special because what happened, my father, he was a really good horseman. My father was from Chile, so he came very young to Peru. So when I first came to United States in 2004, I started to do good. I used to own horses, you know, that at the same time I was trainer, you know, and I was doing good. Win a couple races, making a little money, you know. And my dad, he always used to say, because he used to be a guy that he liked to talk to me every day. And he always used to tell me, said, son, why don't go to the sale and buy a baby? You're a lucky guy. You will do good. And Mike, I don't know why I was so mad with my dad when he used to tell me that. I used to find so many excuses to don't do it. Dad, you think this is easy? This is very hard. I don't have no time and stuff like that. So finally, Mike, my dad passed away in February 2016. So now it's coming the next year, 2017, and I decide to go to the sale. First time in my life I went to the sale in 2017, and I bought this filly, Estilo Femenino. So made me feel like my dad teach me, you see? You don't want to listen to me? Looking what happened now. And looking all the stuff that happened after that, it's incredible.
Oh, what a great story, and so many great stories in that trainer talk show. That was only 15 minutes of the full hour interview. You can go back and listen on our website, horseracingradio.net. But Juan Arregada really enjoyed that conversation. He is our industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris. Congratulations to him and his entire team. Fantastic stuff. When I come back, I'll get you set for hour number two. It's a busy hour. I'll tell you all about it next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune into Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mighty Hot kicking right back. Mighty Hot still in front. Clayton in second. Running on his dotted line in behind the top four as they corner, but it's Mighty Hot in front, the one to catch. In the Queen's Plate, chased by Clayton. Then to Cumsey's War, and behind them, Curlin's Voyage. But Mighty Hot is long gone. Mighty Hot has got the Queen's Plate completely wrapped up. And this is a dominant performance. Daisuke Fukamoto. Mighty Hot, full of heart, by 8 lengths. Velichek second. Clayton third. To Cumsey's War fourth. And Curlin's Voyage was fifth. 2-1-98.
Robert Geller with the call of Mighty Hot's victory in the Queen's Plate last year. Woodbine opens their doors again later today after a long shutdown, 180 days without being able to kick things off. And it's great to see the Thoroughbreds back in action later today. No spectators allowed. I'll talk to CEO Jim Lawson coming up here in just a few minutes. Going to visit with Tessa Bechet, who is the longtime assistant to Brad Cox. She joins me as this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. That comes your way at 9:20. And at 9:40, Jim Gluckson from the Breeders' Cup will be here to preview the upcoming Royal Ascot Meet, which begins on Tuesday. A lot of things still to look forward to, including Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with me in the final segment of today's show at 10:40 Eastern Time. Well, I started telling you a few months ago about the new outdoor superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. And if you haven't been down there to check it out, if you're an outdoorsman and you like to hunt and you like to fish, you need to head over there now. If you're in central Kentucky, I promise you, you won't be disappointed. It's owned, by the way, the store is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and it really has everything you need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges and a full line of bows that you can choose from. So stop in and see them today. It's the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. Well, as I told you, it's a busy second half of the program. Really, next 2 hours are going to be loaded. You're going to hear from Sean Clancy with his In the Room segment. You're going to hear from Kurt Becker as he takes you on a stroll through racing history, as we do every single Saturday morning here on the program. Poll question today. If you haven't already weighed in, go to our Twitter feed and do so at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. What will you remember most about this year's Triple Crown? Medina Spirit wins the Kentucky Derby, Rombauer winning the Preakness, Essential Quality Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont, or drug allegations against Bob Baffert? I want to know your thoughts. Let me know what you will remember most about this year's Triple Crown. Don't forget, you can follow us on our website, too, horseracingradio.net. I'm back. Hour two of the show kicks off next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. With the Triple Crown races in the rearview mirror, the eyes of the racing world turn to Royal Ascot in England as their prestigious meet starts this Tuesday, June 15th, and runs through next Saturday, June 19th. U.S.-based trainer Wesley Ward, who's been over in England since June 5th, has won 11 races since the 2013 meeting in June of that year, and, as usual, has sent a solid contingent across the pond, led by Campanelle, who won at the meet last year, as well as another Grade 1 in France. Hall of Fame jockey John Velasquez will ride most of the Ward runners at Royal Ascot. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning, rolling on. If you missed any portion of the first hour of the program, my interview with Grant Forster talking about the defending champion Pirate's Punch and today's Grade 3 Salvatore Mile at Monmouth, or the Industry Star of the Week interview with Juan Arregada, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. And by the way, when you're on our website, don't forget that you can sign up for our two weekly newsletters, absolutely free. We send them in right to your email. It keeps you updated on guests and programming and different things that are coming up here on the network. So make sure you sign up free on our website, horseracingradio.net. Busy, busy second half of the show coming up. It begins momentarily with Jim Lawson, who is the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment, and really looking forward to this visit. And I know that the past couple of times that Jim has joined me on this program, we've been talking about the fact that he has worked tirelessly, and not just him, the team at Woodbine and in the horse racing industry in Canada, working tirelessly with the government to see racing return again. And it looks like, well, it's definite now, it's going to happen. And it's going to happen later this afternoon with a stellar 11-race program. It begins at 1:20 Eastern. And how about this, okay? Woodbine, we haven't seen racing there for 180 days. Well, they took 120 entries plus three also eligibles for Saturday. Their Sunday program, you think that's good? That was fantastic. The Sunday program has 150 entries plus two also eligibles in 13 races. So in an era where we often talk about short fields and lack of quality and not great betting opportunities, forget about it. This weekend at Woodbine, you want great betting opportunities. You want great entertainment. You're going to get all of that later today and tomorrow, and I had the privilege now of welcoming in Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment. Jim, good morning. Happy opening day.
Hey, Mike. Nice to talk to you under these circumstances. It's great to be on, and boy, we're excited about this afternoon. As you say, great cards today and all weekend, so it's really going to be fun.
I have to tell you, the last time we talked, and it was, I don't remember, maybe 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, there was a tone in your voice where you're always positive about the sport, but there was part of you that I know was deflated because as much as you would try to get this done, it just wasn't happening. And now to finally see all your hard work and the team's hard work and the industry's hard work come to fruition has to be rewarding.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, the most rewarding part is seeing the smile and the excitement on everyone else's voice this week when we announced on Monday we were well prepared. We've been working with the government through last weekend to make sure this could happen and accelerate the opening of the province. And we worked very hard to make sure that horse racing was in step one of the reopening of the province. And so it's rewarding, and it's rewarding that everyone gets a chance to race. We've got, as you said, full cards both today and tomorrow. And I was frustrated. I mean, I had worked so hard with the government and making inroads. People saw the social media stuff that I was doing, Mike, but that was just a small portion of the discussions that were going on with the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Sport, and the Premier's office directly. And the frustrating part is I was having the right discussions with the right people, and they just could not get the chief medical officer in the province to budge on horse racing, and I was pulling my hair out, quite frankly. And so that was the frustration you heard in my voice, and we finally got through to them. There was a good chance that racing wasn't going to be until step two, which was July, and they accelerated as a result of the efforts of everyone, and we're thrilled to be going now.
You know, considering the fact that racing is a sport played outdoors, you think that it would be, well, tailor-made to be included in the first stage of the roadmap to reopen plan. It baffles me that you had to work so hard to convince legislators and medical officers that that was the case. What was their reluctance to include horse racing in the first stage of the reopen, Jim?
Well, the reluctance was never really well expressed, and you're absolutely right. We, you know, as we learn more about this virus and the variants, it became increasingly clear that if you were masked and you were outside and you were socially distanced, the numbers are minuscule in terms of the transferability of this virus. And so we had made that case. We were in a far different position this spring than we were last spring. I think we can all remember the days, you know, last spring, last April and May, when we were bringing our groceries home and wiping them and cleaning them, and we were afraid to touch anything. And you know, I started golfing, but I was afraid to touch, you know, pick up someone else's golf ball on the green. It was very different back then. And this year we learned so much more about the virus and how it spreads. And that was the frustrating part. In my discussions with them, they just would not engage in terms of why not. And it took about 3 weeks ago, I put their backs to the wall in terms of the National Hockey League. And I'm a former hockey guy and love the NHL playoffs. But I said, hey, how do they get at the table? And if you can have those discussions with them, why can't you have the discussions with us? We're outdoors. Hockey's indoors. I just like the same treatment or the same opportunity to discuss the same protocols. At that point, we had advanced what we were prepared to do in terms of rapid testing of our jockeys and our valets and grooms, all of those things. And I put that in front of them, and they still wouldn't budge. So it was just frustrating. I can't tell you that they really ever engaged in enough of a discussion to get that answer, Mike.
How were you able to keep all of the horsemen happy as you were going through this process?
Well, I chuckle when you say that. I don't think I was able to keep them happy based on the phone calls and the texts that I was getting. There was no question they were frustrated. I think the only way that they were kept content is that they knew that we were fighting for them. We kept giving them hope. I had regular discussions with some of our major trainers, and including our friend Mr. Cassie, who's just a backbone here in terms I don't know how many he's got entered this weekend, but you know, Mark was getting a lot of pressure from his owners, for example, and all I kept saying was, listen, we're doing our best, and just tell your owners, guys, that we will get going as early as we can. We are not sitting back idly, and I think that gave them some comfort. And we did a number of things to help them, in terms of workouts and starting gates and full training and things that race preparedness. I think getting the condition book out a few weeks ago, like 3 weeks ago, when we had no idea where we were going to be allowed to race, but we still put out this condition book and announced that we were opening. I think the only way, and happy is too strong a word, but at least they kept their horses at Woodbine for the most part, and a lot of it had to do with communication and giving them hope. And I think the turning point for a lot of them just to say, okay, we're staying, is when we announced opening day on June the 5th. We didn't quite get there, but we announced it and we put out a condition book, and they went, good for you guys. You're trying, and we're going to support you. And thanks to all the trainers and owners out in our community who did support us, because you know, we ended up not losing a lot of horses to south of the border, and I think 170 horses racing this weekend is indicative of that. And we're going to have another great weekend next weekend with some stakes races next weekend, so we're excited.
Yeah, 270 over the course of the 2 days.
270,
Yeah, opening day today, and then 150 tomorrow. And you're talking about 24 races, and you're going to have full fields, and that is welcome news to horse players who have been tormented by many short fields at tracks around the country and around the North America, and now they're going to have a chance to swing at the fences with some big fields and great batting opportunities at Woodbine coming up later today and tomorrow and throughout the entire meet. Talking with Jim Lawson, who is the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment, a very happy Jim Lawson on this Saturday morning. Jim, what were a couple of the other things, or some of the other things, that are included in the first stage of the reopening plan by the Ontario government?
Well, there's certainly, and it's related to racing, the patios, outdoor dining is now going to be permitted, small gatherings of people, certainly the opportunity to get together outside in parks and sports, and all of that is coming. So it's changed. There's real relief in Ontario. And when I say there's a tie-in to racing, Mike made the point last night to the Alcohol and Gaming Commission of Ontario that there's no reason that we as a racetrack should be treated any differently than the restaurants. It's one of the most beautiful patios in the city of Toronto, overlooking the city and the racetrack, and serves great food. And so we're looking to get that open on the same basis that other outdoor patios are open. So I'm hoping we're able to do that. Step two, which will allow some people to start coming back, is scheduled for the July 2nd, our long weekend. We're hoping to get going for the long weekend, and maybe a couple days early. That the Premier has shown that if the numbers are good, he's prepared to accelerate the scheduled reopenings or the steps. So we're hoping to get fans back as quickly as possible, and this weekend is just a great first step, and something we didn't anticipate. And as a result, Mike and I, we have maiden special weights are going today and tomorrow, and we've got a couple of features. I think it's the ninth race today is a non-winners of two other than, and same tomorrow. We've got one non-winners of two other than. Those are the features. We didn't know we were racing until Monday, so we couldn't change our stake schedule. But we've got not only big field sizes and lots of races both days, but we've got quality racing both today and tomorrow also.
And today's card includes a $50,000 guaranteed pick five pool and a $100,000 guaranteed early pick four. And here's one thing that I love, Jim. The jackpot high five is going to resume with a carryover. So you have a carryover of more than $117,000 going into the jackpot high five on today's opening day program. How cool is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. We're going to attract some interest. And as you said, I mean, I'm like everyone else. I've been watching field sizes, and at times you just wince for the entire industry, the small field sizes, and it's not good for wagering. It's not good for the sport. But Woodbine has a great brand right now, and we've got a lot of people, but for the fact that the borders have been closed and that will continue to hinder us, we've got a lot of people interested in coming. We had 2,500 stall applications this year, and when things settle down here, and now that we've got racing going, we're expecting another 400 or 500 horses to ship in, and we'll be full up at around 2,000. Good for our management team and our racing office. I think they've done a great job. Scott Lane and his team, you know, they wrote great cards for this weekend on quick notice, and I'm looking forward to an exciting season. I think Woodbine is well positioned, and we're getting a lot of horses, and it's fun, and it's great for the local industry and economy, and we're thrilled to get going.
What's the latest on the border reopening, Jim?
Well, it continues to be an issue for people coming over. Certainly, there's been, you know, no issue with horses. Livestock coming over is essential, and horse fans coming over, that's not the problem. And certain people can get exemptions if they require to work on both sides of the border. We see a lot with that with our harness racing drivers. If we're starting at Mohawk tonight with our harness racing, and the drivers have been able to come back and can start right away. But in terms of people crossing the border right now, I think both the Canadian government and U.S. government are looking at those border restrictions. In the first instance, I know Canadians are not going to have to quarantine if they've had both vaccinations. Right now there's still a requirement of 14 days of quarantine. But I think what you're going to see is cooperation from both governments. There's so much commerce and cross-border travel for tourism and other reasons that people are crossing the borders, that I think you're going to see that relax. Certainly in July, I would hope common sense will prevail, and people, there'll be some free flow at the borders, and that will help, because trainers are a little reluctant to send their horses up here if they can't come, or if they have to quarantine, because that doesn't work for them. So we're hoping that will be looked after, and certainly by the fall, when we've got the big turf weekend with the Natalma in the summer and the Woodbine Mile and International, I mean, that we need those border restrictions to be completely eased by then, and I think they will be.
Well, Jim, it's been a long time coming, but so happy to be able to do this interview with you on opening day of the Woodbine meet. It begins today. I mentioned that 11 race card. First post is 1:20 Eastern, and really appreciate it. Congratulations to you, to the team, and to all the horsemen who stuck by the Woodbine community as this was going on. And I know that there's a sigh of relief as we get things kicked off later today. So enjoy opening day, enjoy the meet, and I'm sure we'll be talking again very, very soon.
Love it, Mike. Thanks for having me on. And yes, look forward to talking to you again. And everyone have a great day and enjoy the racing. Thank you.
All right. Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment. What a nice job he did spelling everything out and walking you through the process. It's been a long road, as it has been for so many people. I mean, let's face it, Woodbine is not the only organization that has been battling and facing restrictions. And there are so many people that have been devastated by the pandemic. And the horsemen have hung in. And it's a hearty group, and congratulations to everybody at Woodbine Entertainment for getting this off the ground, and really look forward to the racing returning later today. When I come back, it is time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, and then Jim Gluckson will join me at 9:40 Eastern to preview the upcoming Ascot meet. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Broken Vow. a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup winning you're in Fleur-de-Lis for the Distaff division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
An undefeated graded stakes winner on the track, Algorithms, has sired over 70% winners from starters. His top runners include Pennsylvania Derby winner Math Wizard, graded stakes winner Recruiting Ready, juvenile stakes winner and multiple graded stakes placed South Bend. And these recent stakes winners and stakes performers.
To get there, but Kanani will win it.
Algorithms, standing at Claiborne Farm.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion.
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Oh, welcome to this week's edition of Unsung Heroes. And once again, I have the opportunity to visit with an individual in our sport who is vital to the success of one trainer in particular, and that's trainer Brad Cox. I welcome in his longtime assistant trainer, Tessa Bechet, who is with me now as this week's unsung hero. Tessa, congratulations.
Thank you. Hello.
You know, Brad's always the one in the spotlight. I've interviewed him on this program a million times. He was on the show with me last Saturday, as a matter of fact. But every successful trainer will tell you that they cannot do what they do, and they can't have the success that they have without really good people around them. And when I reached out to Brad and asked him if there was anybody he had in mind who would be a great fit for an unsung hero segment, he immediately sent me your information. So that I'm sure means a lot to you.
Absolutely. I've worked for Brad for 5 years, and having his respect is paramount to me. So I'm very flattered that he thought that highly of me.
What's it like working for a guy that has all this success in recent years?
I don't really think about it much as far as the day-to-day goes, because When I started for him, he had, you know, less than half of what he has now as far as the number of the horses and even the quality. So I don't really think about it on a day-to-day, but I definitely recognize, you know, how far he's come and respect all the hard work he's put into it.
Tell me more about your role with the team.
Well, the main thing I do, which is just kind of how it ended up when I started, is the two-year-old program. So every year at Keeneland, maybe a few in March, but mostly during April and especially May after the Derby, we get all of our two-year-olds in, and I start putting them through their paces and their little baby boot camp I have over here. So we do a lot of their initial works over here, their gate works, all the practice that it takes to get up to the point where they're ready for a gate work, and starting to open-mindedly judge them based on their ability and what we think they'll be good at. And whenever we have horses that start to stand out a little bit, I frequently send those over to Churchill early on in that time of year. As things go by, you know, coming into fall and whatnot, I'll usually end up keeping them a little longer. But the horses that stand out the most, I'll send over to Churchill around this time of year.
Whatever you're doing, it's working, so don't change a thing.
okay.
How did you learn to work with these young horses and do it so successfully?
Well, I learn something new every day, so there's that. I think a lot of it is you just have to be open-minded and let the horses teach you what they need, and so you can sorry for the interruption.
No problem.
So when I started out, I was riding show jumpers and barrel horses and horses at the sale barn when I was a kid. And I learned a lot about horses and kind of just how to listen to what they need. And that's really helped me in this job.
Tell me about some of the big success stories that you've had. I know we see a lot of the Brad Cox runners. And by the way, I think I've talked with you now for about 4 or 5 minutes, and I haven't even congratulated you on Essential Quality's big win in the Belmont last weekend. So congrats to you and the team on that one.
Thank you. They actually just sent his flowers down from Belmont today, so they're sitting right here in the office until I send them over to Churchill. It's pretty impressive.
Was he one of those horses you worked with early on?
Yep. Yeah, we had him here at Keeneland until we breezed him, I think his first or second half. And he was kind of one of the chosen ones from the very beginning as far as everybody's notes on him, whether it was from, like, his yearling trainer and all the guys at Godolphin, Jimmy Bell and Dan Pride, and everybody was really excited about this colt. So when we got him in, he never disappointed. He did exactly what everyone expected him to do and has continued to be that horse. So he hasn't surpassed anyone's expectations, I don't think. I think we all kind of thought there was greatness in there.
What was it like for you watching him battle down the stretch last Saturday?
Well, there's a lot of fulfillment on my end for two reasons. One is that, you know, knowing you helped put the foundation on a horse like that, you know, it gives you a big sense of pride. But I think a lot of what we want is we want to be right. We want to know what we're looking at. So it feels really good to be right.
Visiting with longtime Brad Cox assistant trainer Tessa Boucher. She is this week's unsung hero. This segment presented each week by our friends at Claiborne. Tessa, tell me about some of the youngsters that you've worked with that you are so proud of, that they've gone on to do great things.
Oh, wow. Well, there's a lot of them. I'm proud of all of them if they can show that they want to do it and get up there and win a race for us. It's huge. I love, like, a good underdog, too, a horse that we thought, you know, we liked, but, you know, kind of lay dormantly for a while. I would have to say our absolute number one horse, you know, for my string that we were the most proud of is Monomoy Girl. She was a horse who kind of flew under the radar, and we'll have a few of those every year that kind of do their business quietly. They don't get anybody excited. They never disappoint you. They're just there. And then they start running, or you have maybe a moment of brilliance, a gate work where they really blast their competition away with absolutely no effort. And they'll really kind of start to stick out to you. And for her, that was definitely her. She came in, she was just a big, tall, long chestnut thing with some opinions. And we just trained her throughout the summer at Ellis. And then we actually ran her at Indiana first time out. We didn't quite make the race we had picked for her at Ellis. We chose a mile on the grass because it was very difficult to get her to come out of the gate. She was very, like, didn't understand the purpose, very lackadaisical about it. And so we chose to run her long on the grass to make it a good, easy first experience. And we chose Indiana because we just didn't think that she had what it took to break her maiden at Churchill. So she won her first two races long on the grass, and then, you know, she became Monomoy girl shortly after. But she's the number one, like, favorite of mine that we've had for sure.
Anybody else stand out? You said there was a bunch of them. Anybody else? That's a great story about Monomoy girl, by the way.
Yeah. Wells Bayou was another one. He came in and had been through the two-year-old sale and was kind of underweight and just spent all his time laying down and sleeping and very quiet. And then as soon as you breezed him, he'd go in 36, no problem. Like in his initial works, you know, he did them in hand, did them really well. And we chose to give him a break. And that's something that we recognized he needed, even though there was really nothing wrong with him. And when he came back, it's like he went from a boy to being a man, and he ended up putting a good series of wins together and becoming a nice graded stake horse. So I would say that's another kind of a horse that lay dormant for us that we trained quietly throughout the summer and ended up being a really nice horse.
Oh, fantastic stories. How did the love of horse racing begin for Tessa Boucher?
My dad actually used to take me to Long Acres when I was a kid. And he took me several times for the morning works, and that's kind of where I got hooked on racing. You can send those to the trash. And, yes. And he ended up being he's a $2 bettor. And so he would take me around, and we'd make all our $2 bets. And when I went to the morning workouts, I just thought that was the most magical thing I'd ever seen. These people getting paid to ride these, like, amazing creatures. And I've been in pony riding lessons for a little while, but I have to say, like, I think I was 8 or 9 when I first saw a racehorse on the track, and I was smitten after that. So I grew up riding all sorts of different types of horses, green horses, older horses, jumpers, hunters, barrel horses, you know, typical horse crazy girl. But I moved to Del Mar when I was about 20, and I worked at a restaurant called the Brigantine, which probably many of these listeners know. It overlooks the training track at Del Mar, and it's right on the corner of Via de la Valle and the Pacific Coast Highway, and they're famous for their fish tacos. So I would sit there polishing my silverware and watching these horses train from the windows. And I told the manager, the next trainer that walks in that door, I'm going to ask him for a job. And it was actually Bob Hess Jr. And they pointed him out to me because, of course, I didn't know who anybody was. And I told him, I want to gallop racehorses. And he was like, well, I could use some help. And I think I made up maybe a little fib or two about having ridden racehorses before, you know,
sure.
In hindsight, probably did that. But he gave me an opportunity to come and jog horses, and I got licensed, and I worked from the entire meet. And, I mean, it was a dream come true. I mean, I could not wait to get up. The track opened at 4:30 every morning in Del Mar at that time, and I could not wait to get up at 3:30 in the morning and make my way over there to do it and then go work my other job. I was enamored with it. So I kind of progressed from that to moving to I actually started going to Cal Poly Pomona and started galloping at Santa Anita. And that was a difficult switch for me. And I really had to learn what was up at that point. I went from jogging horses to galloping for Wayne Lucas, who really helped me out. He's the coach. He teaches everybody. And that's kind of how I got hooked.
How did you end up with Brad Cox?
After graduating college in California and trying a little bit of an office job and trying to get away from galloping, I moved to Oklahoma to sale prep quarter horses, actually, yearlings, and eventually made my way over here. And I was actually galloping for Proctor and working in the clubhouse at Keeneland and kind of doing sales on the side, you know, for 4-star and whatnot. And I saw Brad one day, and I'd met him at a sale, and he just asked me, are you going to go back to, are you going to go to Fairhill with Proctor? And I was like, I don't know. I'm just going to be here for a while, staying with my dad, hanging out. He was like, oh, do you want to freelance some horses? And so I told him, sure. And I saw the direction his business was going, and I saw an opportunity for myself to get back into assistant work, which is what I'd been doing in California before I left. And it turned out he was looking for somebody and was needing to start expanding. So that's how I started. And that was about 5 years ago.
Fantastic stuff from Tessa Bechet. Again, 5 years as the assistant trainer for Brad Cox. Tessa, before I let you go, I'll ask you one more question. What's the most rewarding part of your job?
That's a really tough one. I think a lot of people would say just winning the big races. And I think that that's definitely one of the most exciting things. But I get a lot of personal joy from watching these young horses develop into something. So whether that's they break their maiden special weight when at one point we weren't even sure they'd make it to the races, or whether that means they win a little stake when it's a horse who couldn't outrun you or I as a two-year-old, and they end up winning a stake as a four-year-old or something like that. It's all the victories. I guess it's the small victories in a way that is the thing that keeps me going the most, that I appreciate and like about the job the most.
Well, Tessa, I can tell you your enthusiasm for the sport and for the horse is contagious, and I can see why Brad asked me to have you as a guest and nominated you for this Unsung Hero segment. Very deserving. Congratulations, and congrats on all your success, and let's keep it rolling.
Sounds great. Mike, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Tessa Bechet here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. She is indeed this week's Unsung Hero, presented by Claiborne. Very, very deserving. I'll be back with more right after this word from Claiborne.
Eclipse champion Blame. Among sires with less than 10 crops, he has more Grade 1 winners than any stallion standing under $100,000, including Grade 1 winners Nadal, Marley's Freedom, Fault, Abscond, and French Classic winner Singa, plus these recent standout performers. With success on the track and with yearlings bringing up to $400,000, this proven son of Arch is truly a gold value stallion. Blame, standing at Claiborne Farm.
A privilege for me to be able to bring you those types of stories. And our sport is filled with unsung heroes like Tessa. If you know someone that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero, much like Brad did, nominate them today by emailing me their story. You can email it directly to me, mike@horseracingradio.net. Several of you have done that. mike@horseracingradio.net. Let me know their story. Let me know that you feel they should be an unsung hero, and I will do my best to recognize them during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. When I come back, I'll visit with Jim Gluckson from the Breeders' Cup. We'll look ahead to the upcoming Royal Ascot race meet. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Unlike most domestic animals, under normal circumstances, horses cannot vomit. This is due to many reasons, such as the stomach is very strong and it won't open easily, the abdominal muscles cannot squeeze the stomach, and horses do not have a vomiting reflex. For more Flair Facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Live racing is back at Woodbine starting today, and in this week's North of the Border report, John LeBlanc Jr. shares memories of his first Woodbine win, and I'll tell you about a few horses to watch during this year's meet. The date was July 17th, 1993, and it turned out to be a memorable one for trainer John LeBlanc Jr. The appropriately named Canada First rolled to a three-length victory and provided LeBlanc with his first Woodbine score. But LeBlanc was quick to point out that Canada First had also given him his first career win at Greenwood, yet another excellent performance, winning that day by seven lengths. He went on to talk about Canada First rising up the ranks, saying, quote, "At first, the horse was a $12,000 claimer when he broke his maiden. He won it so easily, the next year we ran for $25,000, and we ended up running in an allowance.
At the age of 4, trainer Mike DiPaolo claimed him from me for $32,000. This horse started out at the bottom, but just continued to improve. He was a great horse. And in this week's Ones to Watch from Canadian Thoroughbreds Jennifer Morrison, we focused on John Bernhaus, who has one of the biggest thoroughbred racing operations in Ontario, racing, breeding, and standing stallions under his Colebrook Farms banner. A look at the work tabs from the last couple of weekends at Woodbine shows dozens of Colebrook horses, all trained by Bernhaus's daughter, Ashley, getting ready to roll. Decimator is an excellent prospect, having ended 2020 with a good third-place finish in the Display Stakes, won by subsequent Tampa Bay Derby winner Helium. Electricious, a 6-year-old gelding who won on opening weekend in 2020, is another one to keep an eye on and is training briskly this spring. The Colebrook team also hopes for stakes success for its Ontario-bred Queen's Plate-eligible Perfect Crime. Look for the popular black silks with the red and purple lightning bolt when Woodbine opens the 2021 season later today. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Royal Approval is further back as well. And then on this stand side, More Beautiful now being asked a few questions by Ryan Moore from Scarlet Bear, Wings of a Dove. And from the back of the field, Mamba Wamba. They're running down towards the final furlong. Campanelli doing quite well on the far side with Sacred now. And these two are the leaders from Sardinia Sunset, Caroline Dale. And then from the back behind these is Happy Romance. But Campanelli has done it the hard way here and wins the Queen Mary. Some performance from stall one. Sacred second. Back in third then was Caroline Dale. Far side, Happy Romance. Scarlet Bear running on well as well. And just behind them, Sardinia Sunset and Mamba Wamba.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. You know, since Wesley Ward became the first American trainer to win a race at Royal Ascot, that was in 2009, with Strike the Tiger in the Windsor Castle Stakes. He's gone on to saddle 11 winners at that prestigious meet. And Campanelli, one of the winners that came last year in the Grade 2 Queen Mary, and what a performance that was. Wesley Ward back again this year with several contenders. Royal Ascot getting ready to open on Tuesday. There will be 4 Breeders' Cup Challenge races, winning your in events, contested over the course of that meet next week. And who better to talk about those races and the entire meet than my good friend Jim Gluckson from the Breeders' Cup. Jimmy, welcome, my friend.
Mike, thanks for having me today. Good to be on.
Yeah, excited to talk about Royal Ascot. You know, I remember last year when we were, you know, in the midst of the pandemic, and now we're starting to come out of it. Things are improving. It seems like a different feel this year than it did, of course, last year with the Royal Ascot races. But it's always such a special race meet.
It defines world class competition at Royal Ascot. Interestingly enough, similar to Belmont Stakes Day last weekend, there'll be about 12,000 spectators back at Royal Ascot for the races, of course, starting on Tuesday. So hopefully things in Britain will start coming back as they have here in the United States. So looking forward to it. This is the 4th year of the Breeders' Cup Association, of Breeders' Cup Challenge, winning your in races with the Ascot Authority, with Royal Ascot. So we're delighted to be back again. Of course, these races are televised live on NBCSN starting on Tuesday with our first Breeders' Cup winning to win in the first race of the Royal Meet, the Queen Anne Stakes, for an automatic berth into the FanDuel Breeders' Cup Mile course on turf.
Have you been to Royal Ascot, Jimmy?
I've had the privilege of being twice to Royal Ascot, 2 times, Mike.
Wow.
Yes, I went in 2004, when it was a very different racetrack than it is today, and I went back in 2000, I believe in 2019, I returned to Royal Ascot, where it was just a beautiful course, as it is today, a beautiful grandstand and enclosure area. So it's special. Obviously, it's different here, as the races go off very quickly. It was just about a half hour between the races, and there were just 6 a day. So it's quieter, 6 or 7 a day. It's quite an experience, and the focus on the great racing during the afternoons each day of the meeting.
Yeah, I have never had the privilege to be there, at least not to this point anyway. And I was going to ask you, for those of us like myself who haven't been to Royal Ascot, what is it that makes it so special? But I think you just kind of summed it up, you know, in the attire that you see from the gentlemen and from the ladies that attend the races there is really second to none. We talk about the Derby hats and all of that kind of stuff that goes along with the Kentucky Derby, and that's very special in its own right. But there's something different about the appearance of Royal Ascot, even when you watch it on television.
Well, it definitely, I mean, I've found it to be a very concentrated, slow attention to the horses during the period. The focus is on the racehorse. There's certainly a majesty that surrounds it, but the prestige of winning one of these races is spectacular. Obviously, the large sizes of some of these fields, or these sprints where they break off into two groups, 8 on one side and 12 on another, or as many as 24 great horses going in the races, is also terrific and a little kooky in a way when you see them. And it's a real challenge for the announcer on these straight events to pick up the fields on both sides. But it's a real thrill, and I think that it's something that everyone should do at least once, no question.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. We touched on the four Breeders' Cup Challenge races that will be contested next week, beginning with that Queen Anne Stakes on Tuesday, opening day. What are some of the other highlights that folks can look forward to, not just from the race standpoint, but from the horses and the people that are going to be represented next week?
Yeah. Well, Mike, obviously, from a Breeders' Cup perspective, we may have as many as three former or defending champions participating. I mean, right away, Order of Australia, who was a huge upset winner of last year's FanDuel Mile in the Queen Anne, is a formidable task in Palace Pier for John and Tandy Gosden, who only lost one race in his career, a terrific racehorse. Palace Pier, as mentioned, Order of Australia for the Coolmore team. And one that shouldn't be overlooked is Lope E. Fernandez, also from the Aidan O'Brien barn. And then we have two former champions in the Queen Anne, in Lord Glitters, who won in 2019, and Accidental Agent, who won in 2018. So I think you've got really solid races. The very first race during the meeting, I think we move on. We have on Wednesday is a winner in for the Longines Breeders' Cup Turf, and that's the Prince of Wales' Stakes at a mile and a quarter. We have last year's 1-2 finishers in Lord North and Adeyeb from the Irish bred Adeyeb in that particular race. That is going to be a terrific event, along with Love from Michael Tabor, Derek Smith, and John Magnier. Mrs. John Magnier, Love, who's unbeaten as a three-year-old, including winning the 1,000 Guineas, the Oaks, Epsom Oaks, and the Yorkshire Oaks, as well as a defending champion in the Fillion Mare Turf, and that would be Odara. So that's a terrific race in its own right. And then we change on Thursday over to the two-year-olds. And you mentioned Wesley Ward, who had spectacular success at Royal Ascot in the Norfolk Stakes, which a field obviously has not been determined quite yet. So there are many runners in there. But he's going to have a two maiden winners in Lucci, who won at Belmont. On May 9, he won at Belmont. And back in April, Macatoni won at Keeneland. That's another runner that he has. So those are two possibilities for him in there. And then if I can just go right on into Saturday, you have the Diamond Jubilee at Turf Sprint, and we have Glass Slippers in that race on the closing day at Royal Ascot. And she, of course, won last year's Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint among the winners who were participating from last year's Breeders' Cup at Royal Ascot. So that closes out the meeting as far as the Group 1 races on a very high note.
Yeah, quality, quality, quality each day of that Royal Ascot meet. Again, it begins on Tuesday. Talking with Jim Gluckson from the Breeders' Cup, really doing a great job spelling everything. You know, the big horses you can watch for. Jimmy, I didn't tell you that I was going to ask you this question, but I know you're on top of things and you can handle it. So there have been several challenge races already contested, and, of course, things got rolling here in the United States a couple of weeks ago. Which horses thus far have kind of stood out to you, the horses that have already won a challenge race and punched their ticket to the Breeders' Cup?
Well, we talk about, Mike, great milers here in the world, and we touched on Palace Pier just a little while ago. I've been impressed by a top mare in Japan named Gran Allegria, who has won already, competed in two Breeders' Cup challenge races this year. She won the Victoria Mile to qualify for the Maker's Mark Filly and Mare Turf back on May 16th at Tokyo Racecourse, and came back and almost won again, qualifying for the FanDuel Mile and just finishing second at Tokyo Racecourse in the Yasuda Kinnan to an accomplished older horse named Dannon Kingley, lost just by a head. She's one that I've been, you know, very impressed with beginning for this season as far as horses are concerned. Of course, the first North American race in the Challenge Series took place on the 31st of May, Memorial Day at Santa Anita, when Smooth Like Straight won the Shoemaker Mile to qualify automatically for the FanDuel Breeders' Cup Mile. Those are two impressive horses that I've seen thus far that we look forward to seeing later in the year and progressing towards Del Mar for November 5 and 6.
Yeah, the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, Jimmy, it has been such a delight to watch this series grow and progress, and so many horsemen very appreciative of the fact that they have an opportunity to win and get in to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. And it is the Breeders' Cup World Championships. And I think the fact that it is so well-received, the Challenge Series is so well-received by international participants, is such a feather in the cap of Dora Delgado and the entire team at the Breeders' Cup, who has worked so hard to put this program together over the years.
Mike, that's very. Thank you for the kind words about Dora and her team, Josh Christian and Courtney Reed, who do an excellent job in pulling all the fields together, and especially working on this challenge series. I think you talked about this tremendous benefits of getting free entry into the races, especially getting these wins out of the way early. If you have an oversubscribed race for the Breeders' Cup, either 12 or more than 14 horses, depending on the race, then you don't have to worry about being selected by the committee or getting in on points. You're in the race. It also allows other stables who are thinking of sending second or third or fourth horse to the Breeders' Cup that much more of an opportunity with an entry fee out of the way to bring another horse over here. So those are, you know, some of the benefits here. And also, a nominator of one of these Breeders' Cup Challenge winners also gets a $10,000 bonus. So taking care of all facets here of the horse through its life. It's been a great program for us, and it keeps interest in the Breeders' Cup throughout the year as horses qualify for these races. And as the weeks go by, there are more and more challenge races each weekend, so the excitement builds to the championships.
You know, I can remember 4 years ago when Breeders' Cup was held at Del Mar for the very first time, and many people in the sport were thinking, geez, you know, it's just too small of a venue to have a Breeders' Cup race. And then the next year it was going to be at Keeneland, and I can remember the folks at Keeneland watching closely as to how Del Mar handled it. Well, now we know it was a success at Del Mar, and it was equally, if not more successful, when it came to Keeneland. And now both of those tracks back in the mix again this year, next year. It is just awesome to see these boutique racetracks playing host to the World Championship days, and I think it's worked out beautifully, Jimmy.
That's a good point, Mike. Over the years, when we went into new tracks over time, people had said, well, this one's a little smaller. I don't like the configuration of this one. I don't think it's going to work. We've always seemed to make it work, no matter where it's been. We've taken the great things, the assets the tracks do have, and then make some extra and temporary seating areas for the races, but also limiting attendance so as not to stuff more people and can really fit in into these facilities as did it at Del Mar and at Keeneland on their first time around. We limited the attendance to make it a great experience for everyone. And I think that was a key factor in why these facilities have worked for the Breeders' Cup. And looking forward to those renewals this year and, of course, next year back at Keeneland.
Jimmy, appreciate the visit this morning. Enjoy Royal Ascot and enjoy that road to the Breeders' Cup, my friend.
Mike, thanks very much for having me, and have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Always great to catch up with my man Jimmy Gluckson at the Breeders' Cup. And again, looking forward to Royal Ascot kicking off on Tuesday. When I come back, I'll take a look at a few historical dates in racing history, and I'll get you set for the third hour of the program. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Dan Santa Anita's Winter Spring Meeting is drawing to a close, so make plans to join us over the next two weekends as Sunday, June 20th, is closing day. This Saturday, an outstanding field of California-bred sprinters will go postward in the $100,000 Thor's Echo Stakes at 6 furlongs, and on Sunday, the Grade 3 Affirm Stakes for 3-year-olds at a mile and 1/16th, and the $75,000 Possibly Perfect for fillies and mares at a mile and 1/4 on turf will highlight an 11-race card. First post time on Saturday and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock, so be sure to join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live. Please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating, as walk-up admission is not yet available. And fans, Santa Anita's Grandstand Paddock Room has been reopened. Please visit our website for details. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again.
So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit getvaccineanswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, hon, what you doing with your phone? Taking pictures?
No, I'm asking it questions.
Like what?
Hey, Bobo, do flowers have best friends?
I'm sorry, I'm afraid I don't know that.
Hey, follow me. I want to show you something. Look, flowers do have best friends.
Whoa.
Some answers can only be found in nature. Discover the unsearchable. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a trail near you. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, on this day in racing history, 101 years ago in 1920, Man of War won the Belmont Stakes, which was then run at a distance of a mile and 3/8. He won it in 2:14 and 1/5 and shattered the existing world record by 3 1/5 seconds. Also set the American dirt course record for that distance, too. What a performance that was. June 12, 1926, on this day, the August Belmont family first presented their permanent commemorative Tiffany Trophy to the winner of the Belmont Stakes. The silver trophy was created in 1869 in recognition of Fenian's win in the Belmont. And on this day in 1948, after riding Citation to victory in the Belmont, jockey Eddie Arcaro became the only rider in history to have won 2 Triple Crowns. How cool is that? Yeah, a lot of history on this day in thoroughbred racing. 2 hours down, 1 to go. Still plenty more to come this morning. Hour 3 begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. He sits down for a one-on-one conversation with steeplechase jockey Tom Garner. Plus, Kurt Becker stroll through racing history. And at 10:40 Eastern, I continue down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Hall of Famer Mike Smith. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the show on Sirius 219 XM 201 on our website, horseracingradio.net, and in Louisville, Kentucky on ESPN 680. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Mandalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie's on the outside. Essential Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Baffert does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby. And they're into the stretch. Medina Spirit fights on the outside. Midnight Bourbon. Ron Bauer is rolling up to them. Coming by the eighth pole, it is now Ron Bauer storming to the front, taking over from Midnight Bourbon. Medina Spirit has dropped back. Keep Me in Mind is fourth. Ron Bauer and Flavian Pratt win the Preakness, pulling away by 4 on the wire.
Welcome to the Equine Forum.
And it's Essential Quality and a stubborn Hot Rod Charlie. And the two of them putting on a match race on a furlong to run. Essential Quality on the outside. Hot Rod Charlie won't go away. Essential Quality, too good. Essential Quality has won the Belmont Stakes.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
And with that call from the voice of the Triple Crown, Larry Colmus, the 2021 series has come to an end. And it ended last Saturday in a big way at Belmont Park. Huh? What a horse race that was. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Equine Forum. This is the show that launched a network, and it's right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. And it has been a busy couple of hours this morning. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. My interview with Grant Forster talking about Pirate's Punch, the defending champion that he trains in today's Salvator Mile at Monmouth Park. That interview kicked it off at 8:15. You heard our Industry Star of the Week interview. That was Juan Arregada, who picked up his first graded stakes victory of his training career back on Friday. Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment, was here at 9 o'clock to tell you all about their meet, which opens today after a 180-day hiatus. It is great to see racing back at Woodbine today. Our Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne, was in the second half of the program as well, or second hour of the program. Tessa Bechet, the longtime assistant to trainer Brad Cox. And then you just heard from Jim Gluckson moments ago from the Breeders' Cup, looking ahead to the Royal Ascot meet and to the championship days coming up in November at Del Mar. This third hour of the program is going to be busy as well. Sean Clancy begins this third hour, as we do every single week, with our In the Room segment. He goes in the room with a jockey, one-on-one conversation, and this week it's his good friend, steeplechase jockey Tom Garner. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history comes up at about 10:25 Eastern, and then at 10:40, Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, the man who has won more Breeders' Cup races than any jockey in history, is going to be with me to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. But we're also going to talk about the fact that this is the day. You just heard some of those dates in racing history that I provided to you before we got ready for the third hour of the program. This is the day, June 12th, 1982, the 39-year anniversary of jockey Mike Smith winning his first career race in a $2,000 claiming race at Santa Fe. Going to talk to Mike about that. We'll take a little trip down memory lane with Mike Smith coming up toward the end of the program at 10:40, so do not miss it. Poll question this morning, and I appreciate all the responses. Really curious to see how this one actually plays out. But the poll question this morning, considering all of the things that happened throughout this year's Triple Crown and the positive storylines surrounding the Preakness and the Belmont and even the Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit in a lot of respects before the news of the betamethasone infraction came out. He, the horse himself, Medina Spirit, a very positive story. What will you remember most about this year's Triple Crown? Will it be Medina Spirit's win in the Kentucky Derby? Or Rombauer winning the Preakness? Essential quality Hot Rod Charlie in the Belmont? Or the drug allegations against Bob Baffert? Those are your four choices. Which will you remember most about this year's Triple Crown? At HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you don't do social media, email your answer to me, mike@horseracingradio.net. That's how you can get in touch with the show each and every week. All right, it's time now to go in the room with my good friend Sean Clancy as he sits down with Tom Garner.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey Tom Garner. A steeplechase jockey, Tom plies his trade on both sides of the water, riding in his homeland, England, in the winter, and America in the spring, summer, and fall. He has carved his notch in the jockey colony here, winning the Grade 1 Stakes aboard Winston C. and Rashawn, and is presently tied at the top of the standings. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hi, Sean. Nice to be here.
You enjoyed a stellar run on the final weekend in May, winning four and losing a photo in the fifth, which someday we'll get over. What's that like for a jockey? Do you feel the confidence building when days are going like that?
Yeah, of course. Confidence is everything when it comes to race riding and through, obviously, past experience. And you definitely ride better when there's confidence behind you. And I'm lucky enough to be getting on some really nice horses, so that helps massively. And with confidence as well, that people are having the confidence in me to ride these nice horses is another help. So it's definitely going well, and I'm looking forward to everything going forward.
Yeah, you've filed a long list of European jockeys to come here over about the past decade. Take us through that decision to come here. I mean, your career was going well in England, but to talk us through the decision to come here.
Well, I sort of came on off. I actually came over here on an off chance. I ride a lot in Europe during the summer, as well as England, obviously. But England quiets down. It was real quiet for me during the summer because none of my trainers have really summer jumpers, and I was quiet enough with regards to Europe, with regards to Czech Republic and places where I spend most weekends in the summer. And I decided to come over to work for Graham Ocean, just ride out for recommendation of someone. And when I was over here, unfortunately, it was the year. Paddy Young had a bad fall, and I ended up picking a few rides up for Leslie. Really enjoyed it riding around Saratoga, and I ended up then making a few contacts and selling some horses from England over here, and kept the rides on them. So came back and sort of had a lot of success, and I just thought I think it's time to make a decision to do something else. And with the prize money in England being how it is, I wasn't really making a living. I was riding plenty, but at the same time, going up and down the land in England for £150, you're not really making a lot of money day in, day out. And I took the decision to apply for a visa, and to be honest, I haven't looked back since. It's made a very successful decision for me.
Yeah, Winston C is probably the highlight. I mean, you sold the horse to the Connections and then won two Grade Ones. What's that feeling like?
Yeah, great. Winston was definitely sort of potentially the best horse when I did the deal. I did it with a very good friend of mine, Noel Feely, who's obviously an ex-jockey. He's who's an amazing rider to watch growing up, and he taught me a lot. And I'm now good friends with him, and he put the horse onto me, and I think the horse was bought straight after entry, finishing fourth or fifth in the Grade One novice hurdle, and did the deal. He came over, and he ran in the novice at Nashville, and then went straight to Saratoga, and he could have run in the novice at It was a good run of the novice at Saratoga, but they took the decision to run him in the Smithwick, and it paid off. And, yeah, selling the horse over here and then winning both Grade Ones in New York was, yeah, it was sensational. It was my first. I rode a Group One winner in Italy, but to ride a Group One in America on my first season over here was amazing, and to win two up in New York was sensational. Yeah, so it was it definitely made it very special. Yeah.
And take us back to the beginning, growing up in England. Is riding races, was that always something you wanted to do, or how did that come about?
Well, I grew up with horses. My stepmom used to have a stud farm up in North Wales, and I grew up hunting. And so I live in Gloucestershire, not far from Cheltenham. So I grew up with the likes of Sam Tristan Davis and lads around there, and just hunting and sort of show jumping. But honestly, I always enjoyed going fast, and the adrenaline of jumping obstacles was always something that I enjoyed the most. And I wanted to be a jockey ever since sort of I started riding, really. And growing up, sort of watching A.P. McCoy and, like I mentioned, Noel and Leighton Aspel was a great help. But yeah, it was always on the agenda. And I worked with some great people in England, including Oliver Sherwood, who taught me a lot. And yeah, I owe a lot to the people that I sort of grew up watching and grew up working for. So, but yeah, it was always on the card, especially as I'm a Gloucester as well. Live near Cheltenham, watching this festival every year, skiving off school to watch the festival every year. So it's something that I've dreamed to do, and thankfully I'm living the dream.
For sure. Yeah, and you've done it great. I mean, you've traveled the world riding races and had fun doing it. What's it like dealing with the ups and downs of being a jockey, especially a jump jockey? I mean, you obviously more ups and downs, literally, being a jockey. But what's that like? And has that been something that, you know, has been easy or tough? Or what's that like for you?
Yeah, look, yeah, the ups are great, but unfortunately in this game you have a lot more downs, and I've been riddled with injuries really throughout my career. I first broke my collarbone on Hennessy a day at Newbury, which was quite a bad break. I had to have an operation on it, and then from then on I was riddled with broken collarbones. I came back too soon on a couple, and one fall, I think I broke my left collarbone. I think that's now 13 times, and my right one won.
Wow.
So I've been riddled with collarbone injuries. I've broken my leg, my left leg, which was my tib, fib, and ankle. I did that actually. I actually had a stint riding on the flat when my weight was good in the summer, previous to coming to America, and a horse came out of the stall at Charlie Hills's, and it was a two-year-old at Colt. It went one way, and I went the other, and I just it was a soft enough fall, but the ground was quick, and yeah, landed awkwardly, and that put me out for a while. Broken a couple of vertebrae. So it's definitely got its downs, and, like, I've always... Staying sound is the main thing, really, for a jump jockey, because, like, any time I'm off for injury, then other people are getting on horses that I could be potentially riding, and I know, like, people benefit from other injuries. It's just a game, you know? But the highs have definitely made it worthwhile, as well, obviously, the Grade Ones, and I actually came back to ride Winston after breaking a collarbone a week later, and the second Grade One on him. I did it at the Colonial the Saturday before, and I grimmed and bared it and rode with a broken collarbone at Saratoga, and thankfully he won. And then that year I took a few weeks off, came back, rode a winner here, and then went to the Pardubice and finished second, and then came back here, and the Monday after I broke it again. So it's
wow.
I've definitely had my fair share of injuries. So as long as I stay sound and the horses stay sound, then that's the main thing. The main thing that's sort of the main thing that's be a positive if everything goes right, you know.
For sure. And mentally, how do you deal with it? I mean, we've touched upon it. Just getting down and yeah, especially when you're getting hurt and things, losing races and getting hurt and things like that. I mean, how hard is that for you?
Yeah, mental health is a massive thing in this sport, especially when you've got the injuries, you've got the horses not running well, and you've also got the social media side of it, especially in England, where the betting public decides to take them on themselves to write nasty things on social media. And I haven't had as bad as a lot of people. I've been quite lucky, but it's every day in, day out, people get abusive messages on Instagram and Twitter about horses not running well or jockeys making mistakes, and even death threats to some jockeys just purely because someone's lost money on. And it's not good for anyone's mental health when you're reading that sort of things. And I've had my fair share of sort of feeling down and stuff, and I think I'm quite lucky to deal with it. I deal with it in quite a positive way, but I know a lot of people deal with it differently. And actually, something that's becoming more and more sort of known about. I think people know about it more and more these days than they did sort of 10 years ago. And there's actually something coming out that Nathan Horrocks, who used to be a jockey, now produces films and stuff. He's actually done recently, it's yet to be released, but he's actually done a piece on mental health for jockeys and something I just touched on with social media, and that's something that will be out in, I'd say, the next couple of months. I've seen the full episode because we actually were background, we were extras in it, with a few of my fellow jockeys, and it hit the nail on the head, and I can't wait for people to see that, and hopefully people take note of it and stop with the social media abuse and things, because it's definitely, mental health is everything, really. And it's not nice when someone is feeling down. Yeah, I hope people take note.
No question. Talk to us about a friend, James Banks. I know he's a dear friend of yours and a jockey who we lost far too young.
Yeah, 3rd of February last year, I got a phone call that James had taken his own life. He was one of my best friends. We did everything together, really. And he was one of the people I owe a hell of a lot to for my riding. We first worked at Alan King's together, and then really the rest was history. We're best mates sort of for going on 8-10 years, really. He was a great jockey. He retired. He couldn't really deal with it mentally. He hit a bit of a rough patch and was drinking quite a lot. His mental health, which I really didn't know about. Didn't know that he was sort of in that way, and unfortunately it got the better of him and he took his own life. And yeah, it hit me very hard I still think about him every day. And actually, when I rode Rashan last year, he was the first person I thought about when I crossed the line. And previously before that, we lost Liam Treadwell to mental health as well, who Liam and I carried James in to the funeral. So that was another stellar blow to lose such a good guy like Liam. And obviously his riding, he rode the Grand National winner in Mon Mown. And so for a guy to go from such a high in such a short time to being mental to get the mental health getting the better of him is something that was just a massive shock. And yeah, it's just heartbreaking, really. And fortunately, I thought after James we learned a massive lesson, and clearly obviously didn't. Mental health, no matter how you're feeling, it's going to be they're not going to be the last, unfortunately, which is a bit of a strong thing to say, but I thought James would teach a massive lesson, and then obviously what happened to Liam was devastating. So it's something that's quite close to my heart, the mental health side of it, just purely because of, I think I owe it to James and Liam.
No doubt. What does the sport do in England to help jockeys mentally, and what can we do here?
Well, we have the PGA have set up. They've been working alongside a lot of people, a lot of charities for years now. But obviously, after the recent events, they've taken quite a lot of forward regards to getting professional help for anyone that's feeling down and in that mindset. But the worst thing is, like the likes of Liam had the help, which is the worrying thing. He'd had the help previously to when he retired and came back riding. And he was actually riding, but it was during lockdown that he took his own life. So I think that was probably a massive part of it. But yeah, the PGA, which is the Professional Jockeys Association in England, they work with a lot of charities called, I think Mind is one of them, and there's Sporting Chances. And it's just getting the help and being able to, with lads being known, there's someone to talk to. There's a 24-hour line that we can ring up any time and just talk to people. And then I'd be open and say, I've spoken to, is actually this winter. I spoke to someone about it just purely because I hadn't got over James, and I don't think I ever will. And I actually just talked to someone about it, and I was on the phone for a couple of hours, and it really helped me. And I actually put another fellow rider onto them not long after, and obviously confidentially, I spoke to him after and didn't mention to anyone that he was getting that help, and it really helped him. And it's just looking out for people and being able to be like letting them know that the help is there. And just talking to someone helped me massively. I'd openly admit I spoke to someone not long ago, and
it helped me, and it could help a lot of people. It's just just letting the people know that the help is there and they're not alone, you know.
Well, I'm with you right there, Tom. I'll openly say the same thing. I've talked to people a few times when I was getting down, and I think being a jockey, I still do it occasionally, even when we're running horses. I'll say to myself, well, I'll be okay because this horse is running Saturday, and if he wins, that'll pick me up. And it's a really tricky cycle you get on as a jockey, kind of living for that, you know, for those highs, and you almost, it becomes part of your life, and I think that does, you know, it's hard. It's very difficult, and I think it's hard too when you do retire. Then you don't even have that, so it's a very strange time when you do retire.
The main thing that I find is obviously I think racing is living a bit in the dark ages, and obviously being a jockey is very independent. It's you're basically self-employed. You're running your own business. You're not like you're on a football team where you have a team of physios, you have a team of sort of sports psychologist that you could talk to at a drop of a hat. You're very much an individual, and you almost put a lot of pressure on yourself to get rides, as well as obviously maintaining weight, which is sweating and maintaining weight. And a lot of people do maintain weight for the wrong, like doing it the wrong ways, you know, with regards to flipping and fasting quite soon instead of eating properly. So there's so many aspects to the sport that we're in and the sport that we love that we can change. Like even the PJ, we have a nutritionist. We have a whole team of nutritionists we can speak to. And regards to eating well and performing well is massive. And I find we're very lucky in England to have the network that's set up regards to the Injured Jockeys Fund, where we have now three rehabilitation centres called Oates House, Peter O'Sullivan House and Jack Berry House, where they have gyms, they have a team of physios, they have doctors that we refer to after injuries, and everything to that is all helps mental health, everything. So in America, I think there's a lot that can be done regards to, say, charities set up to get people the help to any aspect regards to sort of nutritionists, mental health support, psychologists, and even sort of personal trainers and getting people into sort of rehabbing on injuries. And I don't really know much about the flat guys over here, that what they do after injuries and how they rehab themselves. But in England, it's second to none. And I hope that we can help set something up here that going forward that it'll be easy access for every jockey in the country over here.
That's Tom Garner on a somber subject, but an important one. Thanks for sharing your story, Tom. We really, really appreciate your honesty and openness about that.
No problem, Sean. It's great to talk to you.
You know, I have to tell you, that is one of the things I love about Sean Clancy hosting those In the Room segments every week. Sean has played the game. Sean understands. He's been in the room with the jockeys. He's ridden alongside of them, gotten a leg up in the paddock before the races. He knows what goes in to being successful and being unsuccessful in that profession. And that conversation with Tom was fantastic. Different type of segment. I hope you enjoyed it. It was something a little bit different. I thought it was important to get that out there, and really good stuff from Sean, and great. My thanks to Tom Garner for taking time to do that. And as Sean said, to be so candid talking about those things, fantastic stuff. Coming up next is going to be Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. That's always a fan favorite here on the program. And then Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, the winner of 26 Breeders' Cup races, is going to be with me to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup and look back on his very first career win at Santa Fe in a $2,000 claiming race 39 years ago today. That should be fantastic. Really looking forward to that coming up later in the program as well. Just got word, by the way, that the gang in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky is tuned into the program here this morning, so I want to give them a little bit of a shout-out. Fantastic people. Got a chance to meet them this past week when I was down at the golf course down there, had dinner and a lot of laughs, too. Jeff, Julie, Mark, Don, Derek, and Puppy. Thanks for tuning in to the Equine Forum this morning, and really happy to have you on board, and hope you enjoy this upcoming Stroll Through Racing History segment with Kurt Becker. That comes up next on the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Championship racing is now at the legendary Pimlico Racecourse. The Pimlico meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a post time of 12:40 p.m. Tune in on Sunday, June 13th for five great stakes with purses totaling $475,000. Wager on Pimlico's Rainbow Pick 6. The carryover has crushed the Maryland State record and is fast approaching the $1 million mark. Don't miss your chance to win big. Rainbow 6 is offered Friday through Sunday at Pimlico. Limited track admissions or catch the action via live stream at pimlico.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer, Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in 3 decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They're at the top of the lane, Hysterical Lady. Ginger Punch is right there too, and let's see, Octave in the blue colors at the rail continues to make good headway. Homeward bound, Hysterical Lady looking for an upset. Hysterical Lady, Ginger Punch, but here comes Octave down the center of the track now with a big run. Hysterical Lady, Ginger Punch, Octave continues to close ground on the outside. Ginger Punch at the rail in a thriller. Hysterical Lady, Octave on the outside. Three of them going to hit the wire together. Hysterical Lady, Ginger Punch, Ginger Punch to win it. Ginger Punch won it to Hysterical Lady. Octave had to settle for third, and Lady Joni was fourth.
Trevor Denman with the call. Ginger Punch winning the 2007 running of the Breeders' Cup Distaff. You forget how good Ginger Punch was. We remember her today at Gulfstream Park with the Ginger Punch Stakes. The daughter of Awesome Again was, yeah, she was pretty solid. Won 12 of 22 starts, more than $3 million in career earnings. She was the Eclipse Award winner as the champion older mare that year in 2007 after winning the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Trained by Bobby Frankel, owned by Frank Stronach, Stronach Stables, and bred by Adina Springs. Cool that we remember a horse like Ginger Punch on this Saturday down in South Florida. Well-deserved for her. She certainly plays a major role in racing history, as does her trainer, Bobby Frankel. And that leads me into this week's edition of A Stroll Through Racing History with my good friend, Kurt Becker.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thank you for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. So if it's June in the racing world, one thinks of the Kentucky Derby, right? Well, one does if he's talking about the 5 weeks late Derby, run on June 9, 1945. The winner was a colt named Hoop Jr. Foaled on March 15, 1942 in Winchester, Kentucky, Hoop Jr. was sired by Sir Galahad III, who already had sired 2 winners of the Kentucky Derby. Hoop Jr. sold as a yearling on Tuesday, August 10, 1943 in Lexington, Kentucky. Wartime restrictions prevented the shipment of horses by rail to the eastern United States, where yearling sales were typically held, so it was decided by breeders to have a home sale in central Kentucky. The sale site would be a tent placed on the grounds at Keeneland Racecourse. The man who bought the colt from the sale was Fred Hooper, a paving contractor and cattleman from Jacksonville, Florida, who owned a farm near Montgomery, Alabama. Hooper was just entering the horse business. The Sir Galahad colt that he bought that day in Lexington would literally be the first thoroughbred he ever owned, and he would name him Hoop Jr. in honor of his son. The sale price? $10,000. It was respectable, but many folks thought that the colt would bring much more. By comparison, the sale topper sold for $66,000. Still, Hoop Jr. had sold for double the sale average. Critics said he was light-bodied and had poorly made hocks, but others pointed to his balanced physique and the muscling around his hindquarters. One observer noted that the power in his hindquarters was tremendous. For his trainer, owner Fred Hooper would hire Ivan Park, a 38-year-old native of Idaho who had turned to training horses following a successful career as a jockey. Park found early success with Hoop Jr., winning on debut as a juvenile in February of 1944 at Hialeah Park near Miami. The colt would then post three stakes placings during the spring meet at Pimlico before winning a 5-furlong race at Suffolk Downs in 59 seconds flat. Park told Hooper that Hoop Jr. was suffering from sore ankles at that point, and so owner Fred Hooper suggested they give the colt a rest for the remainder of the year, get him ready instead to win the Kentucky Derby. Longtime members of the racing industry scoffed at Hooper's plans, dismissing them as typical of a novice owner. But Park took the message from his owner to heart. He rested the colt and pointed him toward the 1945 campaign. Because of wartime restrictions on racing, the schedule for the Kentucky Derby and the traditional three-year-old races leading to it had been altered considerably. A number of the preps had been canceled, and the Derby itself had been rescheduled from its original date of May 5 and would instead be run on June 9. Because of the uncertain nature of things, with no clear favorite established for the Kentucky Derby, a total of 16 horses passed the entry box for the Run for the Roses, a bulky field by standards of that era. Hoop Jr. drew post position number 12 and would have Eddie Arcaro aboard, fresh off a win in the Wood Memorial in New York. Hoop Jr. would be the second betting choice at 7-2, with Pot O' Luck from Calumet Farm carrying the favorite status at 3-1. A downpour on race morning had rendered the Churchill Downs track muddy, and few horses in the 1945 Kentucky Derby had run on a rain-soaked track. But Hoop Jr. loved it. He went to the front immediately and never looked back, crossing the wires six lengths in front of runner-up Pot O' Luck. Despite travel limits, a crowd of 75,000 spectators was on hand, wagering a total of $2.3 million on the card. The win by Arcaro was his third in the Derby, tying him at the time with Isaac Murphy and Earl Sandy as the winningest jockey in the history of the race. 1 week later, Hoop Jr. would run in the Preakness Stakes at Pimlico and would finish runner-up to Polynesian, but he would suffer a tendon injury in the process. Owner Fred Hooper decided to retire the colt to stud with a record of 4 wins and 4 runner-up finishes from 9 career starts. Hoop Jr. began his stallion career in Lexington at Charles Hagyard's farm, where he stood from 1946 through 1950. For the 1951 breeding season, Hooper relocated the horse to his farm in Alabama. At the time of his death in November of 1964, Hoop Jr. had sired just 120 foals from 16 crops of racing age, including 3 stakes winners. He was the 3rd Kentucky Derby winner to pass away in 1964, the others being Shutout and Venetian Way. We remember Hoop Jr., winner of the 5 weeks late Kentucky Derby, held on June 9, 1945. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Yeah, always so good to take a trip down memory lane with Kurt Becker. My thanks to Kurt and to Lane's End and Keeneland for making those weekly stroll through racing history segments possible. I told you earlier about a couple of memorable dates in racing history. June 12th, a very memorable date in racing history. I told you a few of those things. You know, it was also on this day, not only did Mike Smith, who is going to join me coming up in just a little bit, not only did Mike Smith ride his first career winner, a horse named Future Man, in that $2,000 claiming race at Santa Fe. That was in 1982. It was also on this day, June 12, 1960, that jockey Angel Cordero Jr. rode his first race at El Comandante in Puerto Rico. So a huge day for Hall of Fame jockeys on this June 12th. It's a great anniversary. Mike Smith getting his first career winner. Angel Cordero Jr. getting his career started with his first race at El Comandante in Puerto Rico. I actually took a look as I was getting ready for the Stroll Through Racing History segment here with Kurt. I was taking a look at some other cool, notable dates coming up this week. And tomorrow, June 13th, 1992, is when Angel Cordero Jr. won his first race in 2 tries as a trainer, not as a jockey, as a trainer. So this is a big weekend for Angel Cordero Jr. Rides his first career race, June 12th, 1960, June 13th, 1992. He wins his first race as a trainer. The horse's name, Puccinito, and it was in the 4th race at Belmont Park. It was also tomorrow, June 13th, 1999, that Silver Charm winner of the 1997 Kentucky Derby and Preakness and the 1998 Dubai World Cup, retired after finishing fourth in the Stephen Foster Handicap at Churchill Downs. He retired with earnings of almost $7 million. It was the third highest of all time and won 12 of 24 starts, the great silver charm. Tomorrow, that anniversary. Pretty cool stuff. All right, when I come back, we'll get a chance to visit with Mike Smith as I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup. We'll talk about his Breeders' Cup wins, at least some of them, and we'll look back on that very first career victory all the way back in 1982. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN.
Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. And new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning Your In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. Churchill also has Twilight Racing starting at 5 p.m. each Thursday throughout the remainder of the meet. Add in the strong purses and you're not going to want to miss the Spring Meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pin Oaks Duds Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Let's see what Mainstay's got, and she kicks on. Mainstay quickly up by three lengths, approaching the eighth pole. Quick look over from Frankie Pennington. Mainstay is well in hand, and Mainstay is going to have a dominant debut. She's a half to Vequist, and her name is Mainstay.
Mainstay, the daughter of Darley Stallion Astern, arrived on the scene in a big way with that dominating 7 3/4 length debut victory at Monmouth last Friday. The win made Mainstay a TDN Rising Star, and she is your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Astern, Medaglia d'Oro's fastest son at stud. Mainstay became Astern's first winner from his first Northern Hemisphere crop. Learn more about Astern and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But they have to catch Lure as they turn for home. He spurts away from the field by four. Luthier Enchanteur is now running second, 49er Days. Arazi does not have it. Paradise Creek on the outside. Lure running a huge race this afternoon. He's in front by four. Brief Truce is coming fast, but he's coming too late. Lure does it in front running style. He won by three. Paradise Creek second, followed by Brief Truce. They couldn't get him. He just laid down fantastic fractions. And he, look at this time. He destroyed the track record. 1:32.45. What an effort by Lure.
Tom Durkin bringing them home in the 1992 running of the Breeders' Cup Mile. Lure, the first of two victories in the race and the first of 26 Breeders' Cup wins for Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith. That was something else that day, and I know it's a day that Mike Smith will never forget. Looking forward to visiting with Mike coming up shortly as I take you down the road to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. You know, Lure was the type of horse that, I mean, when he put it all together, he was as good as it gets, and I know that Mike knows that as well as anybody. I couldn't find a race clip of his very first win 39 years ago today at Santa Fe, so I went with that one, his first Breeders' Cup win, and Mike is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike, good morning, my friend. Thanks for taking some time.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
We just heard that call of Lure in 1992, just annihilating the field. You know, who could imagine that when you won that race, you'd be sitting here as the all-time leading jockey in Breeders' Cup history with 26 wins. But that one day in particular, Mike, what do you remember about Lure in 1992?
Well, just I remember how well he was doing leading up to the race. Remember going into the paddock and Shug saying, I can't have him any better. I mean, he's doing that good. We were down inside. He said, go ahead and ride him on out of there. See if you can put him on the lead. he should run a big race today. And then I just remember standing up at the wire trying to control my emotions, but I got a little too excited there, man. I just jumped off after the after the race was over. I was so excited.
Well, I can understand why. You know, it was 10 years earlier that you won your very first career race, and this is the anniversary, June 12th, 1982, 39 years ago today, that a young jockey by the name of Mike Smith rode his first winner by the name of Future Man in a $2,000 claiming race at Santa Fe. Take me back to that day.
Oh, man, that's a long time ago. I just remember when I was riding for Wilson Brown, you know, and I actually galloped that horse a little bit, so he was a special horse to me. I'd gotten on him in the morning several times before I rode him. So, of course, you know, when he won, I was just, man, this is the start. This is what it feels like, man. It was just amazing. So he'll always have a special place in my heart, Future Will.
I think it's fantastic, Mike, when we think about Hall of Famers like yourself and the career that you have now put together. Even trainers like a Bill Mott or a Todd Pletcher, they weren't always Bill Mott. They weren't always Todd Pletcher. Chad Brown wasn't always Chad Brown. Mike Smith wasn't always the Mike Smith we know today. I mean, you started at Santa Fe. You started, you know, getting on horses that were $2,000 claimers, and you worked your tail off and you worked your way up. What were the early days like for Mike Smith?
Just so fun. You know, I think we always were who we were. We just became so blessed. So many things happened, you know, for all of us. But that's what happens when you do anything you like that you truly enjoy, that you you have a passion for it. You don't go to work. You know, you go out to play almost every day, man. It's been that way from day one. I mean, excluding the injuries, you know, that's the only time that you might have an incident that is quite, you know, that you might not, you know, you're not going to want, of course, but the rest of it, every part of it, the ups, the downs, it just teaches you about life, and it's just you have such a passion for it. It never has felt like work. It really hasn't. It's just like I'm going to the playground every day. pretty blessed, yeah. I'll tell you.
What was the moment when Mike Smith knew that he wanted to be a jockey for a living?
You know, I always was, you know, was raised around horses there in New Mexico on my grandparents' ranch, and both sides of my family were involved in racing at some point. My father even rode a little bit. My uncle, Thomas Vallejos, was training. He just recently stopped training. I mean, he trained up, and he's 80, going to be 82 years old now, but was just involved with horses all along, and I was really athletic. I loved sports, wasn't growing much, and I remember watching Secretariat win the Kentucky Derby on TV, and as a little kid, and thinking, man, that's what I want to do. And that, from that moment on, it started. I started practicing from that day on.
Do you remember the first horse that you were aboard?
Well, I've been riding horses since I can't remember, to be honest with you, since I could walk, just about, as far as a horse. But it's, or a first racehorse I was on was probably my grandfather's. Her name was I'm a Saint. We call her Daisy for short, but she was a quarter horse, really pretty black filly quarter horse, and actually won my first match race on her.
Where was that?
In New Mexico. Yeah, New Mexico. I believe the race probably was ran at Artesia, New Mexico. Long time ago.
Yeah, that's so cool, though. I mean, we hear about, you know, jockeys that come from Louisiana and riding in the bush races there. You're riding in match races in New Mexico to get started. What were those like?
Yeah, they were fun, and they were always run on Sundays. And I had to go to church first, my grandma said, and then after that we ran home and loaded them up and went off to the races, man. Those are times I'll never forget. They were just amazing, man. They're the ones that it's what got me going. It's what got me started.
What was your first big break, Mike, that launched you into another level?
Geez, my first big break was the day I decided I want to be a jockey, honestly. I felt like every day was a break for me. I just loved doing what I do. Every racetrack I went to, I thought it was the greatest place I'd ever been. Especially when you win, you know, so life just seemed come pretty easy for me. I mean, I don't know why that was or why it is, but I can just say that I just fall in love with horses was my first break, man. It really was. It was huge. And then I've been blessed to have done so many wonderful things, and I can't name one specific race or one specific horse that I thought, wow, you know, this is my big break. I've made it now. I thought I made it from the day I went to Santa Fe Downs, the first day we pulled through the stable gate. Yeah, I'd made it.
Yeah, it's so special. And to see where you are today after those humble beginnings, and it only comes from hard work, right? You mentioned that you knew that this was what you wanted to do from the very beginning, but you have to work your tail off. Who were some of the people that helped you kind of get started with your career?
You know, early on, my uncle, you know, first and foremost, Thomas Vallejos, you know, he's the one that started me back home. And then, you know, I went into, once I started riding, a guy named Jim Curry way back in New Mexico really helped me out a lot. And I moved on into Oakland, and, you know, I fell in love with Pat Day, man. I met him and watched him and was just in awe of him. And just very blessed that, you know, he became a big influence in my life and really, really helped me out and kind of took me under his wing and showed me around a lot. So I have to say, as far as riders go, you know, Pat Day was the guy who, and still today, every time I blessed to win a big race, man, that's one of the first texts I get on my phone to be Pat, you know.
No kidding.
So I would have to say him as far as, you know, a jockey influence. I mean, as far as trainers go, man, I've been blessed to have ridden for so many amazing trainers, starting off back in, you know, show going to New York and then coming out to California riding for John Sheriff and Bob Baffert and so many wonderful guys that I'm blessed to ride for, Richard Mandela. It's crazy, man. There's just so many of them. I couldn't name them all.
Talking with Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, a little trip down memory lane on this anniversary of his very first career victory coming at Santa Fe in a $2,000 claiming race that was on June 12th, 1982, 39 years ago. And today his win total is far more than that. He has now ridden a total of 5,616 winners. He has won all of those Breeders' Cup races that we mentioned, 26. No jockey has won more. Mike, one thing I like to ask trainers when I have them on this program is to take me inside their house and tell me about the memorabilia that I'm going to see if I walk in there. And, you know, Todd Pletcher has done some amazing things with his house, and he has certain pictures around the house that mean so much to him. He told me that a couple of weeks ago. How about you? If I walk into Mike Smith's house, am I going to see saddle towels, pictures? What am I going to see that's going to remind me of what your career has been like?
Well, in some of the rooms, I probably don't have it near as nice as Todd's, but Todd's been so blessed so well, too. He was another one who helped me out so much when he started, and, you know, back in New York, and blessed to have won some big ones for him as well. It'd probably be something like that. I have a trophy room that's very, very proud of that actually Jill Baffert helped me put together, and it's a gorgeous trophy room. And then you'll have some paintings of some special horses here and there, and then I try to keep some of the house just normal, where there's no paintings or pictures, you know, of racing. So I try to divide it down the middle, but I think racing kind of overtakes it, especially when I've been blessed, you know, with my Breeders' Cups. You know, I have those all on display, so they're pretty neat.
And, of course, that Triple Crown, that doesn't hurt either.
Oh, that stands right in the middle. I will never forget that. Jeez, that was amazing. But that's probably the most amazing trophy that anyone could have. It's like you got the Holy Grail in your house almost, you know.
So if I ask people to create their Mount Rushmore of jockeys, a lot of people are going to have Mike Smith on their Mount Rushmore. Who does Mike Smith put on his Mount Rushmore, his wall of fame for jockeys? Who else is up there for you?
There would be a lot more than four or five, I tell you that. There's just some amazing riders in this world that I've been blessed to have come around. And I think that the time that I got to come when I was a young kid, get the opportunity to watch the guys that I got to really watch ride, was just amazing. And even now to watch these younger guys ride, man, they seem to step it up and take it to another level, man. It's pretty neat. I couldn't honestly name, I don't think we have a mountain big enough.
That's a great way to put it. There have been so many great ones over the years, and Mike Smith certainly among them. How about the horses, Mike? I know there have been so many great horses, and we'd be here all day trying to talk about all these big-name horses that you've ridden. I told you many times that as I was growing up, I had two favorite jockeys. There was Chris McCarron, and there was Mike Smith. And you were my Holy Bull man. As you know, I'm a massive Holy Bull fan and still my favorite horse of all time. And I'm just curious, outside of, like, the – you know, the horses that everybody thinks about, like Justify. Who are some of the horses that are going to come to mind for you when you think back on your career?
Well, Laura, the one you showed, first of all, he was just a really special horse to me. And there's a horse that you guys might not remember, but I won, you know, actually won the Preakness on him. He was a brilliant horse. He made an race record, a horse called Prairie Bayou, you know, back in the day that was a really special horse to me. But, you know, of course, man, I there's so many wonderful horses that I've been so blessed to ride. It'd be hard to say it would be at the top, but I think everyone would always remember Zenyatta as well. She was just an amazing mare and an incredible mare and probably one of the fastest horses for a mile and a quarter, I think, that I've ever been on that at least was timed at that fast was a horse called Arrowgate who ran a speed figure that was out of this world, man, at times. Pretty incredible horse, but again, you know, I've ridden so many good ones. I can't just name a few of them. They're all special in their time. You know, every time you think that one's retiring or they're going out of racing, you think they'll never have another one like that, and then man, here up and comes another one. Man, it's just amazing. So they all deserve to be the best they were during their era, during their third time. So I could never say which one was better or which one meant more because they all mean so much to me. Everything I have is because of them, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah, so well said. Talking with Hall of Famer Mike Smith, going down memory lane with Mike here this morning on the Horse Racing Radio Network, and there are certainly a lot of memories that we could talk about. You know, you mentioned Zenyatta and that great call from Trevor Denman. This is unbelievable as she wins the Breeders' Cup Classic. And then there was Arrowgate, who you also mentioned. That race in Dubai for Arrowgate was just, it was the thing legends are made of, isn't it?
Yeah, that was just something, yeah, man. It'll go down as one of the greatest races I've ever been a part of, if not the greatest one, besides probably Zenyatta beating the boys in the Classic, you know. And then you look at the horses that Arrowgate beat that day, after getting just annihilated, leaving the starting gate and basically spotting them anywhere from 10 to 15 lengths, it seemed like. And, you know, he runs by a horse called Gunrunner who never was defeated again after that.
Yeah, pretty special. You know, Mike, we talk about all your accolades and all the great races that you've won and the great horses you've been aboard. Let's flip it around. Is there a race that Mike Smith would like to have back and do over?
No, everyone I finished second in, to be honest with you, man, I figured out a way I could have won it at some point, you know, unless it was just a margin of distance that was so far, you know, that's just the way I am. I mean, I'm my own worst critic, and I critique every ride I ride, and if I finish second, I say, well, I don't think there's ever been a time I say, well, so there's nothing I would have done any different. Because if I say that, then I finish second again. And who wants to run second, man? I don't like running second, man. Matter of fact, running second is worse to me than running last sometimes. And, you know, I want to figure out a way that I could have made a difference. And sometimes I'll run it through my head so many times, and if I still come out second after every time I run it in my head, then I'll let it go.
Well, it's that competitive edge that makes every athlete great, and you certainly have it. All of the great riders that are in the game today, they have it. They have that will to win. They hate to lose. You hear many athletes talk about that in every sport. What still motivates Mike Smith now? And you're not getting on as many horses, but you're riding some good ones still. What still motivates you?
You know, just getting on horses, getting the opportunity to ride the amazing horses I get to ride. And, yeah, I'm not riding near as many, but, I mean, just the other day I got to fly to New York and ride for Godolphin and Alfica, that filly I won just the game on. you know, getting an opportunity to pick up horses like that, just, you know, out of the blue and competing on the big stage still with these young guys and I'm still holding my own and it's all going well and I'm enjoying being around and riding horses more than anything. You know, it's blessed me with so much. I can honestly say that almost everything, material-wise that I own and some of the wonderful memories as well that go with it are all because of horses, or most of them are all because of a horse. So as long as I'm able to keep doing it and feel like I can compete at the best, you know, with the best at that level, then I'm going to keep doing it because there's nothing else in this world that'll give you that kind of feeling of crossing the finish line first on a beautiful thoroughbred, man. It's the best feeling. I cannot describe it. I wish everyone could feel it. I know you get to feel it as a fan, as an owner, as a trainer, groom, exercise rider, but there is nothing like being on them. That feeling is just a little more special, man. It's crazy.
Well, Mike, listen, I can't thank you enough for spending some time this morning. This was a different type of conversation than we typically get into, but I really enjoyed it. It was a fun trip down memory lane. Congratulations on everything that you have accomplished in your career. Safe trip every time you get a leg up, and continued success, my friend.
Amen. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and I hope I'm still on another year or two.
Let's do it, my man. Mike Smith here in the Horse Racing Radio Network. So classy. So thankful for everything that he's been able to accomplish. And, when I was growing up, it was Chris McCarron, it was Mike Smith. And now to have the privilege, and I will call it a privilege, to be able to interview and have conversations like that with both Chris and Mike on this program is something I never imagined. So well done, Mike Smith, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with the all-time leading jockey in the history of that event. When I come back, I'll tell you what's ahead on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of sire of sires, Taprit, to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter, Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Dan Santa Anita's winter spring meeting is drawing to a close, so make plans to join us over the next 2 weekends as Sunday, June 20th is closing day. This Saturday, an outstanding field of California-bred sprinters will go postward in the $100,000 Thor's Echo Stakes at 6 furlongs, and on Sunday, the Grade 3 Affirm Stakes for 3-year-olds at a mile and 1/16th, and the $75,000 Possibly Perfect for fillies and mares at a mile and 1/4 on turf will highlight an 11-race card. First post time on Saturday in and Sunday will be at 1 o'clock, so be sure to join Tom Quigley and a special guest as they handicap each day's card beginning at 11:50 a.m. at santaanita.com/live. Please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating as walk-up admission is not yet available. And fans, Santa Anita's grandstand paddock room has been reopened. Please visit our website for details. Santa Anita, great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning. Trainer Grant Forster, trainer Juan Arregada, who was this week's Industry Star of the Week. Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment, was with me. Our unsung hero, presented by Claiborne, was Tessa Boucher, the longtime assistant trainer to Brad Cox. She was amazing. Go back and listen to the podcast of that segment. Jim Gluckson from the Breeders' Cup was here to preview Royal Ascot. Sean Clancy went in the room with steeplechase jockey Tom Garner. My thanks to them. To Kurt Becker for putting together the stroll through racing history, and to Hall of Fame jockey Mike Smith, who joined me just a short time ago. If you missed any portion of the show, go to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast of this program and all of our different talk shows we offer throughout the week, and you can sign up for our email newsletter there, too. Follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and on Instagram. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media this morning once again. And to everyone who took time to tune in and to weigh in the poll question, really appreciate you doing that too. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on the Equine Forum. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers.